Good morning, members. We're just trying to get organized. Apologize for the late start, 2 days in a row. Kind of unusual for this committee. Members, what we're going to do is we have Representative Erdahl's. First, I'd like to bring the House Environment, Energy, Natural Resources Committee to order. We're going to have Representative Erdahl walk through his bill. He's going to, many members here do not serve on Representative Erdahl's legacy division. So he will, Mr. Becker will help him walk through the outdoor heritage part. And then Representative Torkelson will walk through the water part, I'm assuming. And then Representative Erdahl will briefly walk through the parks and trails part also and the arts part. And then we'll check with staff here to see what order we'll do amendments in. The thoughts are we would like to finish this bill today. We'll check schedules as we see what time is necessary and what other rooms we may need to move to or if we need to continue to till tomorrow. That's not the intention. The intention is to move through this fairly quickly, but we will have some testimony from folks as needed. Welcome, Chair Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Pleased to bring this fine piece of legislation to you today.
Representative Erdahl, I would like to move House File 1061 to be passed. And Representative Erdahl, are you going to Ways and Means from here?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay, the motion will be to pass with recommendation and go to Ways and Means. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is the... Do you want to do my amendments first, or
Representative Erdahl? Why don't you do a brief walkthrough through the bill? If you want to just tell the folks what the bill is, where the money comes from, very briefly, and then we'll get Mr. Becker, Representative Torkelson, and you. And why don't we leave the clean water for last, even though we like to think of it outdoor heritage, clean water, parks and trails, arts. Let's leave clean water for last. So we'll go Mr. Becker, then you, if that works, Representative Erdahl. But maybe you could give a brief walkthrough of where does this money come from, what's the total pot, things like that, and we'll go from there. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is the money from the constitutional amendment passed in 2008 that appropriates 3/8 of 1% to the four dedicated funds, and it appropriates this year, $450,430,000 for the biennium. Three of the four categories are funded for 2 years. Outdoor heritage is for one, and once the outdoor heritage is included next year, we will be upwards of $550 million in the biennium appropriation. For this year, outdoor heritage is $92,123,000, clean water, $89,000. I'll round off my numbers here. Let's see. Clean water is 89 and 88 next year. Parks and trails, 38,635 and 38,630. Arts and cultural heritage this year, $51,610 and $50,604 next year for a total of $272,271,000 this year and $178,159,000 next year, again for a total of $450,430,000. If I misspoke on my millions and thousands in those first couple, they're millions. Yeah, easy come, easy go around here, but I meant millions. Now, what we have done in this bill is also, besides spending this money, dispersing this money to the people of Minnesota again, we have added more transparency and reporting provisions that are important in tracking this money. We have included provisions to begin restoring the Minnesota State Capitol through a pre-design. We've instituted a competitive grant program in the Amendment A30 that will be considered later. It eliminates most earmarks and have included criteria in the competitive grant program. We've had a lot of people involved in this process, and I want to thank the members and the public and staff, both partisan and nonpartisan, for the work that they have done in helping to craft what sometimes has been a little tricky and elusive form of legislation. So with that, we're going to start with Article 1. And Mr. Becker.
Welcome, Mr. Becker. If you could identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am Bill Becker. I'm the Executive Director of the Lesage Sands Outdoor Heritage Council, the council responsible for making recommendations to the legislature to you on the Outdoor Heritage Fund. Just as a preface, the Outdoor Heritage Fund is by constitution dedicated to protecting, restoring, and enhancing prairies, wetlands, forests, and habitat for fish, game, and wildlife. The appropriations out of the account begin on page 2. I'll briefly mention the title of the appropriation and the amount. And the title of the appropriation and the amount and any interesting features of the appropriation language. On line 210 or 29, we begin the subdivision prairies. The bill is organized by the constitutional categories. On line 210 is the appropriation of $4.69 million to the Department of Natural Resources for wildlife management areas, scientific and natural area, and prairie bank easement acquisitions. This is the third recommendation to this program, therefore it's labeled as phase 3. If you would take a look on line 2.25, there is a transfer out of the appropriation of $759,000 to the Outdoor Heritage Land Management account in the Special Revenue Fund, which we will get to later. This is for the purposes specified in Minnesota Statute Section 97A.056, which is designed to take care of future restoration and enhancement of the lands that have been acquired under this program and to pay the costs of payment in lieu of taxes. It's a perpetual account. On 3.11 is an appropriation of $1.652 million to the Department of Natural Resources for accelerated prairie restoration and enhancement. On line 3.19 is an appropriation of $2.249 million to the Board of Soil and Water Resources for Minnesota buffers for wildlife and water. This particular program adds to the buffer. And on page 4.5, Northern Tallgrass Prairie is an appropriation of $1.72 million to the Nature Conservancy to acquire permanent easements and land. Let's see, on 4.20 is Minnesota Prairie Recovery Project Phase 2, $4.5 million to the Nature Conservancy for the protection of prairie. On page 5.3, Cannon River Headwaters Habitat Complex is $1.877 million to the Trust for Public Land for protection in the Cannon River watershed as well as restoration. On 5.21 is accelerating the Wildlife Management Area Program Phase 3. It's 6.691 to the Commissioner of Natural Resources for an agreement with Pheasants.
Excuse me, Mr. Becker. You will not need to go through each individual one. But I'm going to take Representative Hansen had a question. We'll take that question, and then members, my hope is to walk through a brief overview of it and then get into more questions. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and this is somewhat of a broad question on each of the appropriations. You'll see that the numbers are a series of odd numbers, like the Cannon River is 1.877. We've got a 6.691. Mr. Becker, how are those numbers derived? They're somewhat unusual compared to normal appropriations.
Mr. Becker.
Mr. Chair, The council conducts an exercise where individuals allocate to the potential recipients, and those averages are calculated, and then the council, by motion, adjusts those. In addition, there are some allocations of the management account that create some odd numbers.
Representative Hanson.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Becker, so there's no scientific basis for those numbers. It's an average, based on 12 members' recommendation. It's not a need-based, it's not a scientific basis, it's an average. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Becker.
Members of the committee, I think that there's some rationale and logic behind it, and there is the opportunity to adjust upwards or downwards from the average, which was done. For example, the average for LaSalle Lake wasn't enough to accomplish that particular program, so the number was adjusted upwards to the request.
Representative Hanson.
Mr. Chair, and I think having the odd numbers gives a perception that there is a scientific rationale for the number, but it's not a scientific rationale that rounding these numbers up or down to normal appropriations may save money or it may provide money. These appropriations are not based on what people asked for, which often is not what they may need. We have to make decisions. But if I would encourage members just to look through these appropriations, because you're going to see a lot of numbers that look like they're scientifically based, but they're really just averages. And then when you come to the, and it's an annual appropriation, so there will be a request for proposal again next year. The request for proposal hasn't changed in 3 years very much, so it hasn't adapted as some who worked on this amendment thought it would to deal with new needs. For example, you see a lot of work here on land and land acquisition, but not much on aquatic invasive species or Asian carp. It doesn't provide for those type of things, but it does have a second year appropriation for the administration of the council. So you have the 12-member council, advisory council, has an appropriation each year of $471,000. That's a lot of money, $471,000. And that's a change from previous years, isn't it, Mr. Becker, that before the administrative costs have been done annually, but this year it's done biannually.
Director Becker.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanson, that is correct. The prior appropriation was $600,000.
Representative Hanson.
And Mr. Chair, Mr. Becker, how much is carried over in the appropriations from the prior years that is available for the council to spend?
Director Becker.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanson, we would recommend estimate less than $100,000.
Representative Hanson.
Mr. Chair, so I was a little unclear on that. So we have carried over $100,000 in the past, or we will have $100,000 to carry over on top of the $471,000 from the fiscal year that we're in?
Director Becker.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hanson, I would estimate that we will have $100,000 carryover.
Representative Hanson.
So, Mr. Chair, we'll be at about $575,000 in administration for a 12-member advisory committee.
Director Becker.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. Mr. Chair, I think
Director Becker, if I could, please. Representative Hanson follows up on questioning I had a couple years ago of the administration and the amount of the expenses and such. Director Becker, if I'm not mistaken, what percentage is the administration of the approximately $100 million that you're involved with the dedicated sales tax money? The administration, remind us as a percentage?
Mr. Chair, the $471,000 is just around 5%, or a half a percent, excuse me, of the amount of money available. We are allowed up to 1%, so we're appropriating half of what's allowed by statute.
And I would remind members of how that percentage compares to another board that's operated on this same floor as we are at right now. And Mr. Becker's Lasard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council is. The LCCMR operates on this same floor with approximately 50% of the money that Director Becker is responsible involved with the distribution. And if I'm not mistaken, Mr. Becker, substantially larger staff, substantially larger overhead expenses with approximately 50% of the total amount spent. So I think as we discuss priorities and administrative expenses, I would say you serve as an example of the direction we should go. You don't need 1%. You're not operating with 1%, and that's a goal that we need to work for some other folks also. Next, I had Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was going to go off in another direction, but I...
Representative Wagenius, could you pull your mic down? Thank you.
Thank you. To be fair, if you're talking about the trust fund money, there are far more applications for smaller dollar amounts, and that committee spends a half an hour on, I think it was 80 proposals, and then does peer review on them. So it's a wholly different process, and hard to compare these two committees. And if we do, that would be a good thing to do, but they are very different. But my questions have to do with easements. I think Mr. Becker knows that I'm a fan of easements, but only if they're well written. We can waste a ton of money, or we can get good value. And so we're going over a lot of money being spent on easements. Could you remind the committee in total in this package, first of all, how much money is going into easements and what percentage of the money that is?
Director Becker.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, I don't have the precise figure stored away in my mind. I would estimate that it's in the vicinity of $30 million.
Representative Wagenius.
$30 million. Okay. So to make sure that Minnesotans get value for this $30 million, because that's real money, is there a process that each of these easements is reviewed by someone like DNR or the Department of Administration to see what value, not whether it's a legally competent document, but to look at, because that's a whole different issue, but to look at the value that Minnesotans are getting for the dollar? And do we have a review process in place now for that?
Mr.
Director Becker.
Representative Wagenius, the Lands and Minerals Division in the Department of Natural Resources reviews the easement and the appraisal prior to reimbursement. And generally that comes ahead of the actual closing, but the closing may be established, the date.
Representative Wagenius.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. It seems to me that what they review for is legal competency, and that is to see that it's in the right form, et cetera. And that's great. I think that needs to be done. And to look at the appraised value is a good thing. But it is the drafting of the language that can... I've seen easements where you give with one hand and take it right back with the other hand, and you get nothing. So it seems to me, as we talk about criteria in this committee, Mr. Chair, we need to have someone review easements for value, for what Minnesotans are actually getting for their money. Are they just getting essentially a walk-on hunting program? And if that's what we're buying, let's say that that's what we're buying, and That's what we pay for. That should not be very expensive. If we are getting something that says this land can never be developed and these are the development restrictions and they're very strict, well, we're going to pay more. But we don't have that evaluation. And it terrifies me, actually, that we're spending this much money without that kind of evaluation. And I think that should be the responsibility of this committee to get that kind of evaluation worked into this bill before it leaves this committee.
Well, Representative Wiggini, as you make a good point, there's a number of different programs in the metro. Both Dakota County and now Washington County also have conservation easement programs that conserve the land more of it's an anti-development kind of easement, which is certainly appropriate. I'm very familiar with it, and it works very well to preserve land long-term, both not only for prairie habitat as such, but also for farmland. It allows the farming community to better afford that. Those, we need to be realistic, for the most part, continue to be private property rights, and the private property owner can limit the access to that area where they may be available to be hunted. And many of our WRP programs like that do not include public hunting. And then, as you said, other areas can be those different kind of easements. So we have to be careful when we generalize easements as such. They vary quite a bit. I am going to try and get back on track. I have Representative Dill, and then I would – Representative Wiggins, you have the floor.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think you and I both understand that you can buy a little with an easement, you can buy a lot with an easement. But we have to have a way to assure Minnesotans they're getting what they pay for. And, I mean, on our farm, there's a wetland easement. And it turns out that it was written in the 60s. It was on the farm before we bought the farm. And it was not well written. So it was duck stamp money that bought the easement. And I think they're using the same, this is federal, they're using the same language, and it doesn't work to protect the wetland. Now, we haven't done anything with the wetland, but and I could tell the long, shaggy dog side of the story, too. But I think we have got to have a system when we're spending this kind of money, and I don't think this bill should leave this committee without figuring out some way to have a review of all easements to see that Minnesotans are getting value for their money, or the value that they think they're getting.
Well, Representative Wiggins, let's have that discussion going forward. I think it's more a long-term, it's a very good discussion and one that's important, especially when we begin to get into the discussion about the state buying land, adequately preparing for the costs involved with that land. I think that goes back then to the easements to say, and this bill in its form today, as Mr. Becker has talked a little bit, I think we're more truthful in what the actual land costs are to compare them with easements. We've included a number in here for long-term reimbursements to local units of government in the land purchase and for the long-term maintenance, which in easements oftentimes is supposed to be the responsibility, or is the responsibility oftentimes, of the private property owner. Now, are we scrutinizing that, evaluating that? That's a discussion we need to have. Representative Wiggins, we are going to need to have that more thorough discussion next year on that. I think that's a very important thing that will bring Lessard and the different groups, LCCMR, involved in that as we have that discussion. But I look forward to the discussion as much as possible as we review this bill. I have Representative Dill, and then we're going to go back to Mr. Becker. Representative Dill.
Thank you very much, Chair Magmire, to Chair Erdahl. There's obviously going to be significant land acquisition in this bill as well as in the future. Maybe, you know, we're going to raise about $300 million over time for those types of things. What provisions in this bill or provisions in other areas of this legislature are there to assure counties that they are going to be held harmless for the payments in lieu of taxes?
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and that is a provision that Representative McNamara put into the bill, I believe. Would you, Chair McNamara, care to explain that provision?
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. Representative Dill, we have in this bill the provision for 20%, an amount I believe equal to 20% of the purchase price to be set aside as the way Director Becker has explained. It is in both in outdoor heritage funds in this bill, and you have in your packet an amendment, I believe, that Representative Hancock is going to offer to deal with the other land purchase that is in the parks and trails section of the bill in a way that will have the net effect that the state will not be buying land in this bill without recognizing the true cost and reimbursements to local units of government for those costs lost. Because as we go forward, I believe the citizens of Minnesota that supported this effort thought this was to supplement additional activities of the state of Minnesota, and we need to be truthful. If we're going to supplement and buy land in this bill, we should pay all the costs, because we're going to go out and represent Anderson's district and find a nice slough that's not practical to be farmed anymore. Currently, there's a little bit of taxes being paid even on slough land, and the local units of government need to operate and have roads so the hunting and bird watchers and such can visit that land, and that's the efforts here. And Representative Hancock intends later to offer an amendment on that same point. We will hear later from the county and township people in their efforts to modify the way I have presented to do that. I anticipate as we go along and get in conference committee that we will have additional discussions, but we will allow them, while this bill is being heard, to have that discussion. To this point, Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate that legislation you brought forward. I have a question, though, on the appropriations for the Nature Conservancy. There is no money set aside, so do they pay taxes on all of the land that they purchase?
Mr. Becker?
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, they have agreed to pay taxes on the land that they purchase. They have agreed to pay taxes on the land that they purchase and hold.
Representative Anderson, follow up. Representative Dill, to this point.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, I'm back on the PILT for just a second.
On the PILT. Anything to do with PILT, we're going to do right now. Representative Dill, excuse me.
Thank you. So is the legislation that you're proposing, is that specific to this bill, or is it ongoing to future legacy and Lessard Outdoor Heritage acquisitions, etc.?
Mr. Becker.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dill. On page 29, section 4 establishes the account in statute. So the account is permanent and available for future appropriations bills. Let's go back to line 2.25. Every time there is an appropriation to purchase land that will be held by the state and thus create built liabilities, there is a transfer of 20% of the estimated amount of land being purchased to the account on line 29. So to make this apply to future bills, the appropriation has to be written properly.
Representative Dill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that I thank you for acknowledging in this committee, if this bill passes, that this is important. I thank you.
Well, Representative Dill, you and I and Representative Wagenius have made this since the very beginning of the very first conference committees we were on. That was a bill you had, Representative Dill, if I'm remembering it correctly, and where this all originated. We've had this discussion, and I think it's a bipartisan thing that goes across all spectrums of the political thought process, that we should be responsible, and if we're going to do this, let's do it in the right way. To this point, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just because it's bipartisan doesn't make it constitutional. The plan to take sales tax money that the voters approved and pay property taxes I think if you asked everybody who voted on this, if any of them thought that they would be raising their sales taxes and using that money to pay property taxes, you couldn't find one that would think that that would be an appropriation out of the 1.6 million who voted for this. Mr. Becker, did the council recommend this plan or scheme to take sales tax money and pay property taxes with it?
Mr. Chair.
Director Becker.
Representative Hansen, this is a policy issue, and the council recommends appropriations.
Representative Hansen, I did go before the council, and I now serve on the council as one of the 12 members, and brought this to their attention before, maybe simultaneously. I can't say for sure if I met with them before I introduced the bill, but if I'm not mistaken, Director Becker, I did let them know and made them aware of the bill and my thoughts on that. Director Becker.
Mr. Chair, in fact, we had two meetings of the council devoted to discussion of this, but it was not listed as a decision item because it was a policy item.
And you're correct, Director Becker. I was thinking I introduced the bill. It was actually done as an amendment, if I remember right. Are you done, Representative Hansen? Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, and with your provision, I think the maintenance is fine. I think that's part of protect, restore, and enhance. We had 2 years of discussion about what is protect, restore, and enhance. And maintenance is something that I think is constitutional and falls under that. But taking the sales tax money and paying property taxes with it does not fall under the constitutional language to protect, restore, and enhance. No matter how much you want it to, no matter how much the need is. And also, I think, violates the constitutional requirement on supplanting, because there's a cut that's going to PILT in the budget that we've passed out. So here you're replacing PILT dollars with dedicated dollars. So I think you've got a supplant problem. Mr. Becker, in prior bills, you had the amount of PILT consequence listed. Do you have the total amount PILT consequence for the acquisitions in this bill?
Director Becker.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, we estimated, and the estimate for this bill is between $175 and $195 million, depending on the exact, $1,000.
Right. $1,000 or million?
It's the opposite of Chair Erdahl.
I have a heart attack here.
You added three zeros and he took them off. Director Becker, do you want to just rephrase it so folks here and on TV know?
Mr. Chair, we estimate that it's $175,000 to $195,000 per annum.
Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, and then so per year, Mr. Becker, but in perpetuity.
Mr. Director Becker. Representative Hansen, you are correct.
Mr. Chair, so
Representative Hansen.
So the cost is ongoing for each acquisition. $100,000 here, $200,000 here, soon you're at $1 million, $2 million, $3 million. And the cost consequence for developing the fund to pay for in perpetuity is your obligations then may exceed your appropriations at the end of this life cycle of the amendment.
Well, Representative Hansen, you just gave all the great ammunition for why we put this in the bill. The reality is, if you're going to go buy land with Lessard Sam's or LCCMR money, that's above and beyond the budget. The general fund budget or the way we currently sometimes buy land. And I would tell you, if we're going to go into Representative Anderson's district and take that spot that's being marginally farmed, might be wet this year, Representative Anderson, and they're saying, you know what, I'm willing to either put it in an easement program and turn it into prairie and then I take care of it and pay the taxes, or I'm right next to a WMA, maybe I sell it, or a WPA, WMA we're talking about now because it's state land, I'll maybe sell it to the DNR. They got the land right next door, and I'll let it turn into public hunting. And now all of a sudden, the township there near Glenwood was getting maybe $800 a year taxes, as Representative Hansen talked about. Now it becomes an obligation of the state of Minnesota to pay PILT, or to however we're going to do it. And we're saying, you know what, if we want to restore, enhance, and protect this land for future generations to use, let's recognize the total real cost of doing that. Representative Hansen, you make the point of we've got some questions of how's that going to fit constitutionally. We do need to work on that. I think there's some different ideas of where that money actually will go and all that, but I will tell you that if we're going to restore, enhance, and protect land, we need to recognize all the costs in doing that, and I believe constitutionally that it would pass muster. You make the point that it may not, and neither one of us is a lawyer, so not that that would matter either, but anyway, Representative Hansen.
Well, and Mr. Chair, I think that this will probably result in litigation that should settle the issue, because it's a big issue with tens of millions of dollars in the short term and in the long term ongoing. And this also applies to the debate we had on the LCCMR in using dollars for property tax abatement for the purchase of these lands. Again, I believe, and then under the rubric of restore, protect, and enhance, you can restore and you can enhance without purchase, and you can protect without acquisition. But when you go on a track of acquisition, you have consequences. I think we agree on that in terms of the property tax consequences. I don't think if we have staff look through, or if under discovery the lawyers look through years of debate on this, you won't find any debate on the floor in committees saying that sales tax money that is raised would go to pay for the payment in lieu of taxes. I don't think that was anywhere in the record. And we were all involved in that. Most of us were involved in that great discussion. So here we have a problem. We're cutting payment in lieu of taxes in the general fund with the vote that passed out of here, and it probably will cut again in the future. Maintenance of lands acquired is okay. But payment of property taxes, I think, is going to fail to meet constitutional muster.
Thank you. Representative Fabian, to this point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to go back to, actually, first of all, thank you. I think that's a good thing to have in the bill for purchases moving forward. It's really a large issue when you get north of Highway 2 into northern Minnesota, up in Representative Dill's district and mine and Hancock's. There's a tremendous number of acres, tremendous percentage, 35 up to 80% of the land is owned by the public, you might say, and I think that we do need to solve that problem with regards to funding for those local counties. But I'd like to go back to Representative Anderson's question about the Nature Conservancy, and you asked a question of Mr. Becker, and I believe, Mr. Becker, you said that Nature Conservancy has agreed to pay taxes. Is that correct?
Director Becker.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, that is correct. That was a selling feature of the request.
If Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Becker, if Nature Conservancy were to deed that land over to the DNR, would that continue with that transaction as well?
Director Becker.
Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, no, I don't believe it would.
Representative Fabian. Can I follow up on Representative Fabian's question? Would the DNR then be responsible for bill payment on that land? Director Becker.
Mr. Chair, I believe it would be under the normal Chapter 477 rule.
Director Becker, we'll get that clarified. This meeting is not going to end at 10 o'clock with all these amendments and a vote, so we will have more time to get a clarification on Representative Fabian and Representative Anderson's question to that. Representative Drazkowski, to this point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, you know, I've enjoyed the debate here, and we have talked a lot in the past about the direction we're going as a state and the further encumbrance and of liabilities that we're placing on the taxpayers of Minnesota. I don't know that in the Constitution it says that we're supposed to use the sales tax money to further create another tax liability for the people of Minnesota as we spend the money. And that is the argument that I would make. And I hope that we can go this direction. If we don't, and we don't cover the cost, I would only see that as inhibiting our ability to continue to embark on these acquisitions as we have been in the future. I've got some questions, if I could, Mr. Chair, for Mr. Becker.
Is it in regards to the PILT?
It is not. Draskowski? Well, it is not, Mr. Chair.
Okay, you know, Representative Draskowski, let's save those. I do want to try and get through the overview of the bill. At this point, to members here and to the audience, it does look like we are going to be able to stay in this room until noon. I know other of you have obligations during that committee time, so if you can let staff know when you do need to leave, because I do want to give all members an opportunity, if there are roll call votes, that you have an opportunity to come back and be part of the roll call. So we will honor folks' desire to be back in the room, and if we have to go into short recess at times when we're not able to get enough time for people to vote, we will do that. Representative Wagenius, to the procedural question.
Well, not to the procedural question, to the PILT.
You know what, Representative Wagenius, I have you on the list right after Representative Dill, and then we'll be back. Representative Dill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to Representative Hansen's suggestion that none of the 1.6 million voted for the amendment, contemplating that this we would pay actual liabilities, I can't talk for the other 1,599,000 people, but I can tell you that as one that voted for the amendment, I certainly contemplated this as being one of the biggest issues that we would face in the course of a $300 million bill for the OutSAMS Heritage Council. So I'd just like to say that I, as a voter, contemplated this as an issue, and that is the reason we have pursued it so passionately.
Representative Dill, we know there are at least two people at this table that felt that way, you and I. Representative Wagenius, to this point.
But, yes, I think this discussion of PILT payment should be, it feels a little too confined to me and should be broader, because there are alternatives to doing PILT, and one of them is to do a host fee, and I actually think that has a better chance, much better chance of being constitutional. And we haven't discussed that, but that would be giving money to counties directly at the time of purchase, and I actually think we should discuss it. But the other thing is, I don't recall, and it may be just my memory, that when we were in Legacy Committee, that we got a fiscal note on the amount that you set aside for management and PILT. It seems to me that we have to have an actuarial table that shows, if we were, I think Representative Hansen is absolutely correct that there will be a constitutional challenge. If there is going to be a constitutional challenge, one of the things that has to be on the table is an actuarial table saying the money coming in is sufficient to pay the PILT payments forever. Otherwise, it will look like the decision was arbitrary and capricious. So I think that is something that would be incumbent upon the chair to get, so that you could see how much is for management and how much is actually for PILT payment. I don't think that would be extraordinarily difficult for a good revenue department to do, but I don't recall us getting one like that.
Representative Wagenius, that's a very good idea, and I'm hoping I can't see Mr. Meyer yet, but oh, he is. Well, you're on the wrong side of the world. You don't need to come and talk. Mr. Meyer and Ms. Martinson are there, and from DNR, and they heard you, Representative Wagenius. And to the host fee point, I know representatives of the county and township are here. They had a proposal. They had a possible amendment that they've been working on. It is really not at a point to where I think it would make sense to bring forward, but your point of it possibly having a different opportunity to do some of the similar results that we're trying to get here is one that we will be discussing later before this bill is voted on. I do anticipate bringing them forward and their ideas. I now would like to get back to Director Becker. If you can just touch on the subdivision amounts in your section of the bill, then Representative Torkelson will touch on the highlights in the waters bill. So, Director Becker, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, your next subdivision would be wetlands, and you would say the amount that's for wetlands and go through the other subdivision total amounts, and then we will have opportunity for members to ask individual questions about different individual items. We will then go to Representative Torkelson to do a similar brief overview of the water, and Chair Erdahl will do the last two. I would like to, Representative Erdahl, before 10 o'clock, get you to move your DE amendment, I'm sorry, the A30 amendment that deals with the change in Article 4, so we have the bill in the form you want, at least in the first part of this meeting, and then the intention is to continue through until noon, realizing that members need to do. Let's wait till we get to Article 4, if it's okay, Representative Erdahl. Mr. Becker.
Mr. Chair, thank you. On page 9 is the subdivision dealing with wetlands. The recommendation is...
Excuse me, Mr. Becker, and we'll hold questions until we are through and ready to do Article 4. We'll get the Article 4 adopted, Chair Erdahl, and then we will take questions. But if members, as we're going through, if you have questions, let staff know and we'll get you on the list. To this point, Representative
Mr.
Erdahl.
Chair, are we doing Article 4 before we're doing Article 2?
We're going to go in order now.
So we're back to doing Torkelson before me.
Chair Erdahl, you haven't been on this committee all year, so you don't have the pleasure of knowing that I most times don't finish my sentences. And so the other members at the table have begun to learn that if you get three or four words out, he's now on to the second sentence, and they, in their own mind, craft what the first sentence ended as. And so, and even the audience pretty well follows it now. So I apologize, Representative Erdahl. Mr. Becker.
Mr. Chair, on page 9 begins the wetland subdivision, appropriating $15,934,000 to wetlands. On page 11 is the habitat, general habitat subdivision. It appropriates $24,086,000 to general habitat. What follows on subdivision 6 and beyond is administrative law and some adjustments to past appropriations and statute.
Are you done, Director Becker?
Mr. Chair, yes, I am.
Thank you. Representative Torkelson, do you want to go through Article 2 briefly?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I will do this very briefly. As far as the allocation of funds, this bill allocates approximately $180 million in funds to various agencies for block-type grant programs. The MPCA receives $45.7 million, 26% of the allocation. Department of Ag, $16.4 million, 9% of the allocation. PFA is 33.4, 19% of the allocation. DNR, 21.3, 12% of the allocation. The Board of Water and Soil Resources, 54.4, 31% of the allocation. Met Council, $1 million, 1% of the allocation. Minnesota Department of Health, $6 million, 3% of the allocation. And a small allocation to the Legislative Coordinating Commission for the website. And that is the allocation of funds. As far as statute changes regarding the Clean Water Council, some language changes that tie the council more closely to the constitutional amendment, both in the nature of groundwater. The constitutional amendment, as you know, requires that a percentage of these funds be spent on groundwater, and when the Clean Water Council was first created, groundwater was not as much a priority, so I've added groundwater language in various spots in the statute that describes the duties of the Clean Water Council. And then there are some changes in the makeup of the Clean Water Council. One would be to add the Department of Health. The Department of Health is not included as an agency in the number in the agent non-voting members of the council. That is being added in this legislation. Also, it is proposed to add 2 members of the House of Representatives and 2 members of the Minnesota Senate as non-voting members of the council. The council, in general terms, would continue to be a council of the governor's executive branch, and the voting members of the council are appointed by the governor. There's some other language changes in there that regard protect, enhance, and restore language that, again, reflects the constitutional amendment language. And finally, the council would be identified as the body that would make recommendations to the legislature in the future as to how the clean water portion of these funds is to be spent.
And Representative Torkelson, that is the numbers, when you mentioned numbers in millions, that was 2-year appropriation?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you. Representative Erdahl, do you want to do a brief one of Article 3?
Yes, Mr. Chair, we'll do Article 3. Article 3 is the Parks and Trail Fund appropriations. It's over 2 years. First year, $38,635,000. Second year, $38,630,000. On page 54, the Department of Natural Resources receiving first year $24,033,000, second year $23,193,000. Each of the 3 categories increase the second year because funding is taken off the top the first year for the Lake LaSalle project of $2.1 million. I will say that the split in this, there are 3 divisions that receive the funding here: the Department of Natural Resources, the Metropolitan Council, and then a state grant fund, which is administered through the DNR. The split on that in this bill of the total appropriation is 40% DNR, 40% Met Council, and then 20% for a grant program that is open to the entire state for application, including the Met Council. So the 7 county area is also eligible for that 20%. Under the competitive grant program, $7,298,000 the first year, $7,718,000 the second year. The funding for the Met Council on page 56, $14,597,000 the first year, $15,437,000 the second year. And at the bottom of the page, the establishment of the LaSalle Lake State Recreation Area. And that is a quick synopsis of Article 3.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. Members, I would like to move the H 1061 A30 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like. To the A30 amendment, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, nay. The amendment's adopted. Now, Representative Erdahl, to your
Chair,
amendment,
could we also,
1061.
Could we also
Chair Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could we also do the A47 at this time?
Members, I'll move the A47 amendment. Chair Erdahl, why don't you quickly just tell us what this amendment is? I'm assuming it gets the bill in the shape you'd like, but if you could just tell us quickly what this one does.
All right. The A30, one of the things that it does is it establishes...
Representative Erdahl,
I know I need to just say this first real
quick. Go ahead, Representative Erdahl.
It establishes a competitive grant program for the various categories. The amendment A47 establishes a criteria for issuing the grants.
Thank you, Chair Erdahl, for that clarification. To the A47, all those in... Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just trying to look over this as quickly as possible. I know we're moving fairly quickly, but this is a fairly substantial change to the bill. Has this been done in the past, or what is the rationale here for these changes? If you would help us to understand that better.
Representative Erdahl, would you want to address the competitive? I know you're still trying to just get the bill in the shape you'd like to have us discuss it, but Representative Faulk would like some clarification. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Faulk. When you answer the question, has it ever done before? I'm sure that in the history of Minnesota, there have been changes made to a lot of bills as they go through the process, sometimes substantial. This is a change that actually, a facet that was discussed much earlier in the session. I had considered it, doing a competitive grant program and eliminating nearly all earmarks. There is a mood to do away with earmarks. But I went back basically to the framework that we'd had last year and that Representative Murphy had initiated. We followed through with that, and then after the bill passed, I had some second thoughts, and after a discussion with some leadership folks and also with other members, decided that maybe this was a better approach.
Representative Faulk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Erdahl, for that clarification. I guess I hadn't seen the full list of projects and trying to understand it here quickly, but were there particular things that didn't seem as meritful, maybe is the right word, I'm trying to understand because...
Mr. Chairman and Representative Faulk, not necessarily...
Representative Erdahl.
Could we get the criteria into the amendment? Then I'd be glad to... I just like the bill in the order that I want to move it, and then I'd be glad to go through all of this with you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm not opposed to having the amendment before us, but I'm just trying to understand what I'm voting on, too, so I'm trying to read through it as quickly as possible. But if that is the will of the committee...
Mr. Chair, Representative Faulk, I'll explain a little bit more.
Representative Erdahl, yes.
The first change, the biggest change, is to create this competitive grant program for basically almost all of the entities that were in the previous Article 4. One of the things that we would have had to do eventually, planning down the line, but at the suggestion yesterday of Representative Wagenius, I determined it was very important to move that forward. I appreciate her suggestion yesterday to start getting this criteria in there on how these grants are going to be given out and what the various dispersal entities should be looking at. Now, these criteria were taken from the handbook that was developed last year in this committee, legacy committee, by Representative Morgan and Representative Murphy and the committee. And so we had a lot of the criteria that could be used already developed by Representative Murphy in the handbook. And we used that, nonpartisan staff used that in putting together this criteria. I recognize that it potentially is still a work in progress regarding criteria, and that if suggestions come from members before we go to Ways and Means, we can make some adjustments to that.
Representative Erdahl, I would suggest that policy questions in regards to criteria be done in this committee. And so before we had adjourn today, we will find out if we need to plan on coming back tomorrow, and then we will give people on both sides of the aisle additional time if there's new amendments. But both in the spirit of Chair Solberg and Chair Holberg, we will need to discuss policy here or on the House floor, we will not have a chance in Ways and Means. Additional at this point, Representative Quam, to this point before we move the 847.
I'll go ahead. My question actually was for the A30, for it got quickly enacted.
Oh, well, Representative Quam, it was to get the bill. This committee has had a strong tradition well before I came to allow authors to get the bill into shape. And I actually cut off Chair Erdahl. He wanted to move the 830 and 847 right at the beginning, and I wanted to wait till we got to Article 4. I have, to this point, I had a hand over here. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my question's on 847, just to help me.
To the 847, Representative Hansen.
Representative Erdahl, on 1.4, the commissioner, is that the commissioner of administration?
Have to see which one that matches up with.
Chair Erdahl.
Thank you. I'm sorry, I've got to get the... I'm sorry it took me some time, but yes, that would be the Commissioner of Administration.
And I see the administration behind you, Representative Hansen. You can't see them. They acknowledge the same as Representative Erdahl, that answer is yes. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so on 1.15, that is the Commissioner of Administration as well?
Yes.
Yes. Correct.
Mr.
Yes.
Chair.
And then, Mr. Chair, on 2.1, the Board of Directors, that's the Board of Directors of whom?
Chair Erdahl.
Which one are you asking again? Which line?
Representative Hansen.
On 2.1, the backside of 47.
Representative Erdahl.
2.1? Yes, that would be... Okay. The Humanities Center.
Humanities Center. And Representative Hansen.
And then, Mr. Chair, on 2.11, is that back to Commissioner of Administration?
2.11?
Representative Erdahl.
I'm missing here. Sorry. The last one is the DNR.
Oh.
Ms. Taylor, I'm going to have Ms. Taylor, she's got the drift of what you're asking, Representative Hansen. Ms. Taylor, I'm going to ask you to go back to the first question of Representative Hansen, if you followed the questioning, to clarify who the different agencies that are mentioned in the amendment. Would that work, Representative Hansen? Yes. Ms. Taylor.
Mr. Chair, members, if I'm following the amendment correctly, I believe the first rider that pertains to the Commissioner of Administration. The second would be the Commissioner of Natural Resources. The third would be the Board of Directors of the Humanities Center. And the final one would be the Commissioner of Agriculture.
Questions to that point? Any additional questions on the 847? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's helpful because we know what we're voting on.
Yeah. Thank you for that clarification. Representative Wagenius to the 847.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Erdahl, I appreciate your working on criteria and would wonder if you would consider one additional criteria. I mean, I don't have the language, but think about it for an overriding criteria, which would be that each grantee defines the specific outcomes they expect to achieve. How they measure those outcomes, and a requirement that at the end of the day, the program be evaluated to see if they achieve their outcomes, and that be part of the report that goes up on the website.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Wagenius. If you would write down, please, your suggestions, we'd certainly consider them, and see what we can do with that. Apparently, we'll have some time yet.
Representative Knute to the 847.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, in the speed of what we're doing, Ms. Taylor corrected it. We had gotten we weren't looking at the correct agencies, but Ms. Taylor got it.
I'm sorry, but I was missing a page here, too. So.
Representative Erdahl. Yes. We got it. Thank you. Thank you, Representative Knut. Representative Hilty, the 847.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, to that very point, I'm still somewhat confused. According to Ms. Taylor, the commissioner referred to on line 2.11 as the Commissioner of Agriculture. To award grants that promote the arts, education, history, and cultural heritage. I've known Commissioner Fredrickson for a long time, but somehow I don't think that that's his area of expertise. And I doubt that there's anyone in the Department of Agriculture that has it. Is this correct?
Thank you, Representative Hilty. Ms. Taylor.
Mr. Chair, members, that is correct. If you look at page 8 of the A30 amendment, you'll see the appropriation is for the Commissioner of Agriculture for Competitive Arts and Cultural Heritage Grants Program for County Arts, Education, History, and Cultural Preservation.
Representative Hilty, potentially, I think it could include things like the county fair and former Senator Fredrickson, I wouldn't doubt, probably displayed some sheep in his life at the county fair. So actually, he may have some expertise, and maybe he'll be involved in that. To this point, Representative Falk.
I want to uphold Commissioner Fredrickson's reputation, so it's more likely he showed cattle than sheep, because they come from a cattle farming family.
I had him and Senator Dill mixed up, so thank you, Representative Falk. I suppose you, when you're in the part of ag that's trees, you kind of forget all the different kinds of animals. So sorry for that. I apologize to both senators. To the A47.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Erdahl.
To answer Representative Wagenius' question, I've been informed that what you are requesting is already required of all of these.
To the A47. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The A47 is adopted. Representative Erdahl, we are now back to you. If you could explain the Article 4, I have to the as amended by the A30 and the A47. Then we will go back. I have Representative Draskowski, Representative Wagenius, and Representative Quam all have questions to other parts of the bill, and we'll continue to keep the order with that.
Okay.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So we are on Article 4.
As amended.
Thank you. The appropriations here, $51,610,000 the first year, $50,604,000 the second year. And in the original bill, which you do have before you, you see how it was done. We broke out through earmarks a lot of different programs and projects and entities. And what we have done in this amendment is to basically create grant programs under various dispersal agents. For example, well, I'll go through it. Under Arts and Culture, Cultural Heritage Fund, under the Arts Board, we've only made, I'm looking at a spreadsheet here, I don't know if you have this, but we have included the Film Board. That's the only change to that. Under the Department of Education, they will continue to have libraries. Under the Historical Society, they have the five categories just as we had appropriated them before. The Department of Administration, the addition there is the Public Broadcasting Arts Education and Cultural Preservation Competitive Grant Program. I believe that there are three public broadcasting entities in the state of Minnesota that would be eligible for funding under this this grant. The money that we had appropriated earlier for those three entities follows them into the Department of Administration grant program. The same with all of the others. The money that had been appropriated previously follows into that grant program. Under the Department of Natural Resources, we have the zoos. Under the Minnesota Humanities Center, we have included the children's museums, other museums, the State Science Museum, the Dakota and Ojibwe language projects, the various councils of color, and we have some young adult voting education programs that also would be under the Humanities Center. In terms of the changes that we made in grouping the various programs, the bulk of them went into the Humanities Center. The Purpich Center for the Arts, there is a blank appropriation at this time for Purpich Center. I would expect that something will happen to that as we go through the process. The Department of Agriculture has, as Chair McNamara has mentioned, the County Arts Education and Cultural Preservation Competitive Grant Program, and then the final is the funding for the LCC website. Those are the changes that were made to Article 4. Wait, one other. The other important part of Article 4 that is in here, in both, and really we didn't change it the second time, it just is included in this amendment, and that is the restoration or renovation of the state capitol. We are using $550,000 in legacy money for redesign. Now, as a general course, we have not been appropriating money for capital improvements. I would, from my standpoint, believe that next year, in a bonding bill, we should do a substantial renovation of the appropriate money for a substantial renovation of the Minnesota State Capitol. But we need to get the process started. This amendment came from the CAP Board, from the Historical Society, from the Department of Administration. This is an important first step in long-range planning on what we need to do to stop the pieces of our capital from falling off. So with that, essentially, that is Article 4.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. We have a number of questions, starting with Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Erdahl, with the capital renovation, you mentioned you think that the future may hold discussions around bonding for fixing the capital. Why aren't we considering using the arts and cultural heritage dollars to repair one of our biggest historical treasures in the state of Minnesota? Has that discussion happened in your committee?
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Representative Drazkowski and Mr. Chairman. Has that discussion happened in my committee? Not extensively. I think that there is the general feeling, as I indicated, that we should not be doing capital projects that can be done through bonding of the Capital Investment Committee. And frankly, the last estimate that I saw for the capital restoration was $260 million. This would take up basically all of this part of the funding. And I don't know that is what the people of Minnesota intended. I think you get into the supplement supplant issue as well with that. Again, is this something that should be done through bonding, through capital investment? And, you know, that still is something that is going to be part of the discussion into the future. We're not doing anything today dealing with funding improvements in the state capital. What we are doing is saying that it is a legitimate expense of this committee's money to pre-design, to plan for what we're going to do. And I guess, frankly, it's a discussion for another day how we would do it.
Representative Drazkowski, follow-up. Okay, Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Erdahl, in the outdoor heritage section, I was just interested in the total number of acreage and all of those items. I did have a question on the original bill, page 64, what the location of the Children's Museum of Southern Minnesota was, and then I've got some questions about details of what percentage of land mass is the metro versus the rest of the state, what percentage of population is the metro versus the rest of the state, and then I have a follow-up probably on that last point.
To the first question, Director Becker, did you want to, there was a total acreage question, I believe, to start. Director Becker.
I've got this one purchased.
Or Representative Erdahl, I'm sorry. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do not have easements, but total lands acquired in fee was 10,626. I believe that's acres. The state has 800,862. The federal government, 2,630. Counties, 379. Watershed districts, 257. And nonprofits, 1,498.
Could you repeat the state acreage again?
The state, 5,862.
Thank you.
This is lands acquired in fee.
Thank you. And Representative Quam, do your second question was again? The second question?
The second question, and it gets a bit muddied with the A30, and that's why I was curious on that combination. It was split out on page 64, 11, and 12, a Children's Museum of Southern Minnesota, and I was wanted to exactly understand that location. And then how does that change in this A30?
Representative Erdahl.
Ms. Chair, Representative Quam, that's the Rochester Museum. And they are now eligible under that grant program.
Representative Quam, your third question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Erdahl, because of the 40-40-20 and 40 being dedicated to the metro and then 20 that could be used anywhere in the state. I was just curious, what is the proportionality of landmass metro versus the rest of the state and then population versus the rest of the state?
And to those folks to follow Representative Quam's question, he's talking about Article 3 and the percentage of breakdown between the three different groups in Article 3. Representative Erdahl.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Quam, I don't have that breakdown with me. I'm sure that there are people here that do. And
we'll go back to Representative Quam. Clarification and who you'd like to come down.
I guess the people would have the information. I'm seeing dedicated twice as much than the entire state, which can then be divvied up anywhere, including the metro. And I didn't think that the population of the metro was twice as large as greater Minnesota. And I do really, looking at a map, not believe that the landmass is twice as large as greater Minnesota. So I'm trying to understand the justification other than who sits on a committee of the 40% and 20%.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Erdahl.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Quam, and someone can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that the population division between the metropolitan area and greater Minnesota is approximately 60-40.
Okay,
I'm not right. Representative Wagenius?
Representative Wagenius to the population of the metro and outstate Minnesota.
Yes, it's 55% population is in the metro area, and then the rest would be in the rest of Minnesota. And you might want to add to that number that 64% of the tax money that you're talking about is raised in the seven-county metro area.
Representative Quam, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I can anticipate Representative Wagenius taking into account that locations where more taxes are paid should get more services. I know certain school districts would like to see that balance. But so Representative Erdahl, if it's 55-45, it can't be population-based. And landmass-wise, I would think it'd be pretty much the opposite, proportionality. I'm trying to understand, and, you know, past precedent.
Quam, I've got the landmass now, if okay. You care to get, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Erdahl, to the landmass, is this a landmass between the 7 county and the other 80 counties? If you could identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Chairman, committee, my name is Al Leiford. I work for Douglas County, and I am with the Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails Association, or Coalition. And in round numbers, 96.5% of the state of Minnesota lies outside of the 7-county metropolitan area. 3.5% lies within the boundaries of the 7-county metropolitan area.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So if Representative Erdahl could comment on what caused the 2-to-1 ratio that doesn't seem to, even with taxes paid, quite match up. Mr. Chair.
Representative Erdahl, when you do that, could you remind all the members the location of the state parks? And me being one of those folks that has a metro state park in my district, one of the three, if I remember right, which part of the land mass of the 96% and where are the state parks in there? And who are the people that work in those state parks? Where do they live? Representative Erdahl.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can I speak as one of the few in Minnesota representatives who doesn't have a state park in his district?
You have a state rec area, Representative Erdahl.
Do have that.
That we both worked real hard on.
Thank you. Anyway, you know, I anticipated this discussion coming on later on today or tomorrow, whenever we do it, and we have amendments because, you know, we have one amendment poised to increase the funding or the percentage for the DNR in metro parks, and we have another amendment to go 33-33-33. So, frankly, I don't know that this number, this percentage, is ever set in stone anywhere, and it shouldn't be. Last year it was 43-43-14 under Governor Pawlenty. This year, under Governor Dayton, it became 42-42-16. And, you know, I may be repeating myself several times because we have these other two amendments coming, but let me just say, because Representative Quam has asked, how did we arrive at this? Frankly, you have on one side those who are supporting the governor's 42-42-16, and on the other side, those from Greater Minnesota who are very, very interested in having a larger percentage in the grant program, which would then subtract from the DNR and the Met Council, either both or singly. And so, with a demand for, you know, 26% in the grant program over here and 16% over here, I tried to strike a compromise, something that I still am very hopeful can get through the legislature by essentially kind of going down the middle at 40-40-20. And, you know, as some of you have heard me say before, frankly, the belief is that if neither side is happy with that, maybe we're doing the right thing. Because if we were to give a higher percentage, let's say that we went with the percentage 37-37-26, I would guess then that my friends that represent the suburban areas and the urban areas would be quite displeased. Whereas the greater Minnesota folks would be pretty happy. And that's not what we're trying to do. We're trying to get something that we can work with. And if both sides have to give some on this to reach something that we can do, that's what I'm trying to propose.
Follow-up, Representative Quam. Next on the list, Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. To Representative Erdahl, I heard a lot of positive comments throughout the past year, how the money for the arts and cultural heritage money was divided up and how it really got out to outstate Minnesota and did a good job of being spread around throughout the state. My question now is, under this new grants program, will they have to apply for a grant to get money for our outstate regional arts councils?
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Representative Anderson and Mr. Chairman. Essentially, that's not going to change any more than it has before. Much of the money, for example, in the Historical Society, which they get, I believe, about $12.25 million a year, around half of that is distributed to Greater Minnesota, to not just Greater, but out from local historical societies, and we do have those in the metropolitan area as well, county historical societies, into grant programs, and just in one portion of the Historical Society grant program last summer, nearly 1,000 jobs were created. I mean, they're seasonal jobs, but people were working because of this funding. And there is a grant process, a granting process that the Historical Society has, and also that the Arts Board has, that gets out their funding into Greater Minnesota and outside of, again, their building into the metropolitan area as well. So, to answer your question regarding the areas where most of the money is distributed, essentially they were already doing what I'm proposing to do with these others.
Representative Anderson, do you have a follow-up? Thank you. Representative Wagenius, a question.
Mr. Chairman, I will pass until we get back to the part of the discussion.
Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Erdahl, can you clarify what the relationship of the Capital Preservation Commission is to the CAP Board?
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Hilty, I can comment on that. If anyone from the CAP Board or Department of Administration thinks that I have not adequately described the relationship, they are welcome to come forward and help me out. But I have asked that question. And essentially, the CAP Board is working on more immediate projects within the Capitol and on things on the interior of the Capitol. Whereas what we are proposing, again, this came from the CAP Board, Department of Administration, the Historical Society, is a more long-term view of what we need to do, prioritization and getting the exterior and the whole grounds in a restored.
A follow-up, Representative Hilty?
Anybody?
not to that question, okay. Mr. Chair, but I do have
Mr. Rhodes
question.
Will come down to it.
And this is in relation to the Capitol?
Yes. This is the follow-up on the question that I just answered.
Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Jim Rhodes, Department of Administration. First of all, the CAP Board in statute has certain responsibilities. Department of Administration has certain responsibilities. The Historical Society has certain responsibilities. And the three of us are working together on planning what we need to do with the Capitol. This doesn't deal with the asset preservation repairs that you see with the scaffolding and all that. That's an ongoing project. What we're talking about is to have a a group of people from the top down weigh in on what should be done with the Capitol. And this is a program that is a hybrid of Utah and Idaho, where we are actually taking what we feel the best workable situation and put this group together to figure out what they want to do with the Capitol. This is our treasure in of our state, the number one place in our state, and it has it's the people's place. And so we feel that having this commission would be the best way to get something done so everybody can have ownership of what they want to have done with the Capitol. The Cap Board is one part of it. In statute, they're like the zoning people and the people that care about and take care of the area around the Capitol. Department administration does the repairs, that type of thing, and the Historical Society maintains the historical presence of it. Dave Kelleher is here if I'm answering incorrectly, but we all have a stake in this. Does that help you?
Thank you. Any other questions in particular to this area of testimony? Representative Wagenius?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the things that concerns me about this discussion we're having right now is that there was a proposal to change the facade of the Capitol as a way of getting more working space underneath, totally ignoring the fact that we had one of the most beautiful capitals in the world and one of the most distinguished architects in the world who designed it. I'm hoping that this money is not going to be used to further, there are two things. One, the money could be used to further using the space in the downstairs part of the Capitol in a better way. That seems so reasonable. But to build onto the Capitol as like an annex versus perhaps using the Ford building, which is a historical building, we have a tunnel to it, it's a useful building. Help us out with some notion of how this money is going to be expended, either to preserve our capital or to not preserve it.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wagenius, a few years ago, actually many years ago, there were several projects for the Capitol dating back for all kinds of ideas, including at some point back in the 90s, underground parking under the mall. We had a proposal that we were working on what we call found space, is what you're talking about, that type of thing. But we never had the total buy-in, if you will, of everybody that is a stakeholder in this, the House, the Senate, the Governor's Office, the whole nine yards. And we need to have that. And so the commission is going to do just what you talked about. They're going to talk about these things and come back with ideas and how they want to get this thing rolling to the next step. This is just the planning part of it. We're not building anything. We're not doing anything like that. We just got to get the plan that everybody will have buy-in and ownership of so we can go forward. If nothing happens, you're going to see more problems. It's just not going to... This is the time, and this is the way to get it done. And Representative Erdahl cares a lot about the Capitol, and we talked to him, and this is cultural heritage, if there ever was thing. And this is just the planning part of it. We're not building anything. I got to make that very clear, because we don't know what will come of this commission, how they're going to proceed, but we have it... everybody there to make it work, including the governor's office and the governor.
Thank you, Mr. Rhodes. A follow-up, Representative Wagenius?
No, thank you.
Representative Hansen, to this point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, to this point. And Representative Erdahl, you know I care about the Capitol.
Mr. Chairman, and I should give Representative Hansen credit, because I think the real final idea for me to proceed with this came after our conversation. He had some capital-related legislation that we discussed, and out of that came my urge to do this.
Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Riddle, thank you for that. My concern is we have been down this road before, and Mr. Rhodes, you've kind of said the example of we've had groups and we've had studies and that point of buy-in. of having the buy-in still depends on who's on the commission and whether they speak for the people who can make the decisions. And so, you know, trying this again is a worthy effort, but I think we all should be concerned that it has a history of failure in terms of moving forward. And what I had proposed is and to go up to Representative Druskowski, I think we know some things that we need to do to immediately protect the historical treasures in the Capitol. It's just the will to do them and the will to spend some of this. And I believe that this money is appropriate to spend on some of the arts and historical treasures. Right now, Mr. Chair, I believe we are protecting the gubernatorial portraits with arts money or history money with glass because there was some graffiti done on. So the precedent is there. It's the public building for art that has arts and history in it. So I believe it is appropriate to spend money there. This is taking another step. I know there are people who don't want to use any of this money for the building, but I don't know. I think that's a decision we should make here, and I think we are going to need to spend. I'm skeptical of a bonding appropriation of $100 million or $200 million. We are going to need a 5 or 10 year project of appropriations of $10 to $15 million that needs actually to start now to continue improving the building, the historical and arts portion, and we are going to need bonding money for the basic infrastructure of the building to make sure that it holds together and isn't falling on people as as it ages. So I applaud you, Representative Vergal and Mr. Rhodes, for starting this, but I think we should go into this with our eyes wide open, and we need to actually start making some decisions on this.
Okay. And thank you, Representative Hansen. I don't think I heard a question in there, but I would entertain a response.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, you hit the nail on the head here. First of all, if you look at the legislation that Chairman Erdahl has proposed, the commission is made up of some everybody has a stake in it, people, so that's part of it. There's no sense in repairing or beautifying a portrait if its water's still going to leak on them. We have to repair the things so we can then get the historical part of it preserved. So, for an example, up in the upper dome, we have those portraits and all those types of things, but if water's leaking on them, we don't want to put them up and then have the water still leak on them. So that's why we need a plan. In the meantime, we're still going to do repairs that we set out to do with money that was funded last time around to deal with the pieces that are falling off especially the marble. It just so everybody knows, there's 4 marble domes in the world, Peter's, our capital, the Rhode Island capital, and
Maine.
There's,
Rhode Island?
Taj Mahal. And we are
Maine,
we have to deal with Minnesota, Maine, Taj Mahal, it's all the same thing.
Thank you, Mr.
Rhodes. We have to deal with the Minnesota winters, which has really hurt. But this is what Cass Gilbert envisioned with the marble. And by the way, the marble is not exactly as bright as it used to be 100 years ago. But against that blue sky, that's what our trademark is. So we'll continue on, and your comments are well taken.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chairman, just some comments as well, please. As I said, it could very well be, some of your suggestions on funding might be taken, but man, that's a discussion for another day on how we do it. I view the importance of prioritization, and as you were saying, Representative Wagenius, the building that we have is what we have to concentrate on first. That is my intent. And in terms of the will of the legislature, of the will of the state of Minnesota to do it, it's with the, most everything else, it seems, how we deal with things. It's when the matter becomes more urgent that the will becomes greater. And, we've got visible evidence of the need now in the form also of scaffolding, of canopies above our heads as we go into the building, and frankly, if some of the stuff that's loose on top were to fall, those canopies would be like paper falling, or, you know, stopping a rock. So we need to do that. Yeah.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl, for making us all a little more nervous.
Take the
Senator
tunnel.
Falk, do you have a question to this point?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess this discussion of this bill has taken kind of an interesting course, and being that we're talking about the Capitol, I felt maybe this is the most appropriate time to bring this forward, but I would like to entertain a friendly oral amendment to Representative Erdahl, and I'll just read it and offer up for any discussion. But looking at page 11, line 25, after
Representative Falk, are you on the bill or the amendment?
We are talking about the amendment that deals with the portion of
the
A30 amendment. That is correct.
Okay, and what page on the A30
amendment? Page 11, line 25, after the period, or the sentence that's endless commission, would like to entertain the inserting the language, the initial report must include a plan to reopen the Capitol balcony to the public. In the time that I've been here, and I think for a number of years, the Capitol balcony has not been accessible to the public, and that was one of the things that I think people would enjoy.
Representative Falk, could you clarify for us what you mean by the Capitol balcony?
On the second level, when you look out from across the House chamber, that area that would be open.
Looking out over the Capitol Mall, is that correct?
That is correct.
Thank you for that clarification. Would you please repeat the language?
I would. It would be insert after the period, page 11, line 25, the initial report must include a plan to reopen the Capitol balcony to the public. I can give this to Ms. Taylor if she would like, and she could repeat it to us.
Thank you. Ms. Taylor, would you please repeat the motion?
Sure. And we're amending the A30 amendment. The amendment would read, page 11, line 25, after the period, insert, the initial report must include a plan to reopen the Capitol balcony to the public, period.
And, Mr. Chair, I actually have not actually made the oral amendment. I've just brought this forward for discussion, but if you would like me to move the oral amendment, I wanted to get Representative Erdahl's feedback on this before, as I alluded to it being a friendly amendment being offered.
So are you offering your amendment?
I have not yet offered the amendment, but I'd like to solicit Representative Erdahl's.
Would you care to respond to what I would interpret as a question from Representative Falk? Representative Erdahl.
You know, I think that it would be, Mr. Chairman, Representative Falk, I think that all parts of the Capitol should be restored as they once were. I mean, the Capitol balcony at one time was intended to be used. However, I don't know the ramifications of opening it up to the public at the present time. And Representative Rhodes, would you care to comment? Sometimes there are unintended consequences. And again, I think that everything should be functional, but I don't know about how it should be used.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. Some brief comments, Representative Rhodes.
Thank you. That's an interesting question, an interesting thought. The part of my comments would be it's a little prescriptive for the commission to have a result before they've even met, and you may want to think about letting them at least talk about it but not say they must. The problem with the balcony, my understanding is that, number one, there's pigeons like crazy up there, and the tiles. The tiles are maybe problematical, and I think this is something that the commission should be addressing. That's why we don't know what we can. If you want to put in that, if you do the policy, that's your decision. But that's what the issues probably are.
Thank you, former Representative Rhodes. We do not want to expose the public to crazy pigeons.
I believe Representative
Falk, a follow-up question.
I believe Representative Knuth had a question on to this.
Representative Knuth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think of the balcony as one of the most interesting parts of the Capitol, probably because we've never been allowed to go out there, and it looks inviting to have a place to be outside in the Capitol, in a public area of the Capitol. And so I don't see why it would be a problem to put a plan for it and understand some of the issues you've been talking about. That seems like what we need, is to understand what the problems are and what the challenges would be. and what some of the costs might be, so we can make an informed decision rather than just saying, without even looking at it, that it couldn't happen.
Mr. Chairman, I don't want to say it couldn't happen. I'm a little bit on a limb with my description of the pitches and all that. But the question is to us is that it's something that should be considered, but not should be fixed. I guess that's the issue. I think what I heard you originally say on the amendment is that they must do thus and so.
Thank you, former Representative Rhodes. I believe the issue has been raised and will be considered by the Commission in the future. Other questions to this point? Seeing none, we'll move on with other questions. Next on my list is Representative Brazikowski, who is not here. Representative Knuth, did you have a question to another issue?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are we talking about the bill generally right now?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I'm just curious. I know in the last few years we've been trying to put out a vision more for this 25 years of funding and hoping at the end of it that Minnesotans don't look back and ask what we spent this money on. And so I'm one question on Article 4, and I know in the last few years there was really an intention to say that the way the money was spent was not precedent setting, and I'm curious if Representative Erdahl has the same views of Article 4. Because it's such a big change, kind of in the end of the process this year, and so I'm just curious in terms of setting precedent, your views of Article 4, and then I have another question as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Knuth. You're asking me about the statute that was put in last year, I believe, that we should not be setting precedent, that this should not be assumed to be funding into the future. That was my amendment, and I still support
it. A follow-up, Representative Knuth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then on the overall bill with the Outdoor Heritage Fund, the clean water, the parks and trails, I know and I'm not actually sure about the arts and cultural heritage because I'm served more on the environment committees, but we've spent a fair amount of money on various plans looking out 25 years, and I know that there's a state parks and trails plan. I think the metro region has a plan. There's a clean water plan that was put together, and I'm not sure about the Outdoor Heritage Fund plan, but I'm sure you're more aware of these. And I'm curious how this bill has used those plans and considered those plans as the bill has been developed. If you could outline the plans for us, just a little background, and then let
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kunith, I'm sorry I didn't bring the plans are in books in my office. I did not bring them with me today. We certainly did consider in the arts, history, culture portion, looking at plans into the future, specifically on how the plan was viewed. Dealing in Article 1 and Article 2, Lessard, Sams, and the Clean Water, I think that Mr. Becker or Representative Torkelson, Representative McNamara could speak more directly as to how the plan went into the formation of their parts of the bill.
We'll start with Article 1, Mr. Becker.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. The Outdoor Heritage Fund does have a 25-year plan, and in that 25-year plan is the vision for each section of the state and the priorities for the section, and those are included in the call for requests or RFP that's issued. They will be reevaluated in our first meeting on the 7th of June and adjusted, I would hope, and we'll go into the call for requests. Again.
Thank you, Mr. Becker. In the area of clean water, Representative Knuth, the 25-year framework that was part of last year's bill, a $750,000 project, has been completed, was really kind of completed mid-cycle as far as the recommendations for this particular spending proposal. I'm sure that framework will be considered as we move ahead with future plans as far as clean water goes.
And Mr. Chair, most of the receiving entities in the arts, history, culture portion have also submitted their 25-year plans to us. Regarding the parks and trails, The Met Council, DNR, have their long-range park plans. We are in this bill setting up a procedure by which the Greater Minnesota Parks vision can become more, I guess, more clarified.
Follow-up, Representative Knapp.
So, Mr. Chair, it sounds like the Outdoor Heritage Council is working pretty closely with the plan, and the Parks and Trails working on creating plans and are following their plans.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And the clean water, it sounds like it hasn't really been used to this point.
To that point, Representative Knapp, the framework was not meant to be a plan for spending. It was much broader perspective on water throughout the state, and was not designed to be directly related to make recommendations as to how the clean water funds are spent. It will help inform the council as in its deliberations on future spending.
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Birdall,
I would say that several of the entities that receive money through the Clean Water Council do have long-range plans. However, like DNR or Bowser.
Thank you. Representative Knuth, are you done? Next, I have Representative Hansen. Did you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a question on Article 4, and then I could come back to others if we're still on Article 4. Representative Erdahl, I'm looking at the A30 amendment that we adopted and trying to go back and compare it with a bill that I think was passed out of the Legacy Committee and then came here, and it looks like there's still some earmarks but there's some things that are missing. I'm looking on the original bill at line page 65, the reference to the council's of color, and wondering what happened to them. It looks like there's an appropriation in the bill that was passed out of Legacy Committee, and then it appears that in the amendment that we adopted earlier today, they're gone. So could you maybe tell me what happened to them?
Representative Erdahl.
Excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hansen. You said the Council of Color. What was the other one?
Well, there's, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hansen.
I think there was the language working group. I know
okay,
we...
Okay, all right.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hansen. The quick answer is that, as I summed up earlier, they are under the Humanities Center. The Councils of Color all right now and in the past, the past year, were also funded through the Humanities Center. So they're still there. We just didn't single them out in terms of legislative language, but they are eligible to receive funding through the Humanities Center. The money that they had been appropriated all followed to the Humanities Center. That's where that funding now is.
Representative Hansen, a follow-up.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Representative Erdahl, I see that we're still in the A30, though. We're saying, you know, we identify the State Arts Board, we identify the Historical Society. The Councils of Color are, I believe, separate entities from the Humanities Center. There's still the Veterans Camps, the State Capital Preservation Commission, the Humanities Center. I think one of the successes of the last appropriation was that the Ojibwe language, or some trying to make sure we can protect a disappearing resource for our cultural history, and was identified in the last bills, and it was identified to continue that important work as that language has the potential of becoming extinct. But that appears to be disappearing in the bill. So I'm concerned about equity and making sure that all Minnesotans have some access to important culture that's everybody's culture. And I'm worried that we could lose that with the removal of some of these provisions, still keeping other direct appropriations.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hansen. The intent in doing this was to remove as many, frankly, all of the earmarks would have been good. I think over 90% of them are taken off. Basically, I mean, maybe more than that. We have remaining the capital restoration, and we have the veterans parts. And for various reasons, they're staying. But I've managed to not, by name, have the other ones in there. And even though they are not there by name, they are eligible through the criteria that we are setting and through established precedents within the Humanities Center to make applications for grants there. And once again, the money has followed to the Humanities Center that had been intended for them before.
A follow-up, Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, so Representative Erdahl, we're going to be directing money to the Department of Agriculture to do cultural grants, but we're not going to continue the language working group explicitly for continuation of keeping and preserving the Dakota and Ojibwe language.
Representative Erdahl.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Hansen, by name, you are correct. However, it is my belief that when they make applications, that there still will be the funding that was intended.
Follow up, Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair and Representative Erdahl, we're talking about for that particular appropriation, $75,000 a year. Why? Why would we remove that when we know it's been kind of one of the showpiece successes? I know when I see reports about how that's working well, and it's a vanishing treasure. And I know your historical interest.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hansen. First of all, the funding originally in this bill last year for this program was my language. I shouldn't have said it that way. My bill, my amendment, I remain a strong supporter of the language immersion programs of the Dakota and Ojibwe people. I simply wanted to do away with the earmarks. They are still eligible for the grant program, and the money for the grant program is in the Humanities Center, and I expect that there will be funding from the Humanities Center for the language immersion programs.
Follow-up, Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, and Representative Erdahl, so the competitive process may take some time to develop, and we have the existing appropriation from the prior year that would end on June 30th. And as we know, that there aren't very many folks that are involved in this. So what happens? I could see a hiccup here in funding that could have consequences, in terms of having this language preservation hurt.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hansen. No, we do have the director of the Humanities Center here. Perhaps Mr. O'Fallon can explain if he thinks we have a hiccup problem.
Please identify yourself for the record.
I'm David O'Fallon. I'm the president of the Minnesota Humanities Center.
To this point.
And to this point about the preservation and the continued initiation of the program, specifically the one that you're mentioning, Representative Hansen, And specifically to the hiccup in funding, there is work underway that I imagine can continue until we evolve indeed the processes and procedures that a competitive grant program might be necessary. The fiscal year ends, of course, on the 30th of June, but some of the projects that are currently funded will continue and they're underway. They won't be completed by the 30th of June. I'd like to emphasize the Humanities Center's commitment to work in innovative and collaborative ways with our current partners, the Councils of Color, with the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council, and with others to really find and perhaps enhance and build upon the strengths of the programs that we have currently been working with.
Thank you. Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, are there folks here from the Councils of Color who could testify on the removal of the appropriation, and if they were aware of it before late last night or this morning?
Mm-hmm. Representative Hansen, while they're coming to the table, I would just remind everyone that funding last cycle did not necessarily guarantee funding in the next cycle, and setting up a competitive grant program really puts people to the test, frankly, as to whether or not, in the eyes of, in this case, the Humanities Center, they deserve funding or not. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, given the outline of the goals of these programs as put into language last session by Representative Erdahl.
Mr. Chair, what's wrong is that this was in the bill last night, and these folks went through the process, and then all of a sudden, because of internal caucus problems on the majority side, they had to pull things out. But they didn't pull everything out. They pulled some things out. So there's a prioritization that occurs that doesn't have. That's what's wrong.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. This bill is a work in process. To this point, please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Anna Marie Hill, Indian Affairs Executive Director. And the questions that Representative Hansen, you're asking, thank you for asking those questions and your concerns. And thank you to all members of the committee, especially to Representative Erdahl, who supported us tremendously over many initiatives and has a unique understanding of our history and our cultures of both people in the state of Minnesota, and I think throughout the United States, of Indian people in particular. Specifically to answer some of your questions or concerns, no, I didn't know about this until yesterday afternoon. So that's when I got the news. I've been around for a long time, in one capacity or another, so I understand how the legislature works. So nothing comes as a surprise or a complete shock to me when changes are made or decisions are made differently. I do want to stress that for the last 2 years, we've had the grant program in Indian Affairs Council. And we, I know under my administration, I take very seriously what the language of the law states. So I always clarify what I do prior to writing or establishing a grant program with the Department of Administration and the people that basically govern the grants management area. So if I don't know what I'm doing, I cover what I do. The wording is a bit different in that it establishes a competitive grant process as opposed to just a grant to American Indian tribes and communities, which is basically what it stated before, but all in the same. It is a competitive grant process. I assure you that we signed the conflict of interest forms. We showed no favoritism to any entity throughout the state of Minnesota. We did our very best to find neutral people to sit on the grant funding committee, which we just finished, who could sign that form legally and state that they weren't showing favoritism or partiality. So now we've established my understanding, and this may be this may change, or this may not be a clear understanding, is that this will now be a competitive grant process, and we too will compete for the funding across the board with everybody, because the designation does not state Dakota Ojibwe language. But that's okay. It's my understanding that we will be a part of this process too. I specifically want to hold people to the language of the law. It's a competitive grant process. It's for arts and culture, and whatever the language states, if we are included as part of that, our partners that are well established with the legislature now are a part of that, or if they're not a part of that, they see fit to it that another language program is better equipped to revitalize the language, then that's how it will have to be. I expect no partiality to be given to Indian Affairs Council or any of the players at Indian Affairs Council for not expressly stated in the language, and I expect that will be the outcome. Now, when it comes to, it has been very good these past 2 years. We've had a wonderful relationship. We've been most proud of that, the relationship with the legislature and with the people that granted us the money. So with the Legacy Funding Division. We've had an excellent relationship with Minnesota Humanities with regards to the treaties exhibit. They have some experience granting funding to the American Indian community, I believe, in a 2008 indigenous language funding, I think, for the federal government. Some of that criteria is questionable. They don't allow there's some statements with regards to religious practices. We always bring in our traditional practices as a part of revitalizing our culture. That's what we do. We also serve food as an honor to the people and to the people who are a part of it. There's restrictions with that. We will talk about those things and help them. Also, there's concerns I have with the composition of the board and whether or not enough people from the councils of color or enough people from the American Indian community make up a portion of the people who can grant out to the communities. We'll work on some of those things. If this is what the legislature chooses to do, we'll make a way to work together on the outcome. I have to say I am disappointed that we aren't perhaps the entity that's granting out the money. We do our best to abide by what the letter of the law is, but we'll make it work.
Thank you. A follow-up, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you are a separate state agency.
Yes, we're a state agency.
Mr. Chair, and you will work with whatever the appropriations are and compete, but had you testified on the development of the bill in the Legacy Division? Did the Indian Affairs?
Yes. I mean, up until yesterday, I understood that, Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, that we were a part of the bill.
And Mr. Chair.
Representative Hansen.
And if you had to choose, you would prefer the original bill?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen, I think we did a fine job.
I believe Representative Filty has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hansen pursued exactly the line of questioning that I had intended, but there is one thing still that I would appreciate clarification of, and that is, I believe in the A47 amendment on line 2.1, the Board of Directors referred to as the Board of Directors of the Humanities Council, and Mr. Chair, as long as we have the Executive Director at the table, I am curious to know what the composition of that board is.
Representative Erdahl, would you like to answer that yourself?
I'd like Director O'Fallon to do that, please.
Director O'Fallon.
Mr. Chairman and Representative, I don't have the entire board list ahead in front of me, but it's we can have about, I think, up to 30 people on the board. Six are appointed by the governor. The rest are selected by the board. They are from across the entire state of Minnesota, literally from Duluth and the western part of the state and the southwestern part of the state as well. And they're broadly representative. So I can supply the names. I just don't have them with me at the moment.
Thank you. Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. O'Fallon, are the current appointees, what are the terms of the appointees?
They are for three-year terms and rolling terms, so that there's always a certain amount of churn on the board.
Thank you. Mr. President Hilty, a follow-up. Representative Kwong, do you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The line of questioning and all this, there are so many projects in here and this is the only dedicated pot of money. I understand that there's stuff in here that I'm not going to agree with. I asked earlier, and it was evident that I was not approving of maybe the process of some of the distribution, and I asked for information to better understand. But I must say that this is special money. It's not enough to do everything. And the people I talk to feel that this money should go sort of rotate around and help with areas that aren't general fund. And the most disappointing thing I've heard in this process is people feeling that it now becomes money that they are going to count on year in, year out, and that really becomes even less of a supporting new, doing not existing, ongoing activities. And I think that the diversity of our state speaks to the diversity of what's in here. And I can support this bill because I understand that it is helping a lot of different areas and areas that maybe don't get a piece of the pie when we do our normal budgeting, that aren't there and existing now, that get a shot, get a chance. We can maybe see some wonderful things, and maybe they will get some general funding out of it. But the thing that is most disappointing to me is this, well, we got it last year, so we should get it this year mentality. And I think that, if you're debating constitutionality or intent, the base intent was new things and to improve the state. And so when I look at these, I don't use, well, we got $3 million last year, so we want $5 million this year. That doesn't enter into it. This is for new possibilities and for better things and a better Minnesota. So I hope that the other members on this committee, you know, stop with history has been and start looking what the future can be and realize that we're not all going to get what we want, but there are a lot of good things here that are outside my district, and I'm satisfied with the dancing and the compromise and the pressure. And Representative, Chairman Erdahl, my hat is off to you because the chair of a committee that has the only dedicated funds, that, you know, a source that's not going to be, you know, disappear, and that you have the reins of. You, I can understand the amount of pressure you've gone under, and I commend you so much for the activity you've done in generating this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Quam. I did not hear a question in there. I'll go on to Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Wagenius had brought up earlier the alternative of looking at something different than I'm talking now about the 20% of the land purchases potentially in the bill that would allow for full disclosure and full amount being paid up front for land purchases. She talked about an alternative method that would involve potentially the money going directly when the land's bought. Part of the real estate transaction would include payments potentially like to counties. Representative Wagenius, if it's all right, I think there's representative from the county and from the townships that have worked on this idea. They have some thoughts on this discussion, including how it's used in a somewhat similar way by the counties currently to deal with a completely different issue but has potential. If it'd be all right, I think Mr. Solem and is here, and they could come down and talk about that, Mr. Chair, if they could.
Thank you. I see them approaching the stand. Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Annalie Garlitz, and I'm with the Association of Minnesota Counties. And I want to thank Representative McNamara and Representative Erdahl for putting the provision in the bill that is there right now. We really feel that it helps continue the discussion. You had referenced a proposal that townships, Mr. Sulem and I, had kind of put together and worked on, and we based it off of an idea that Representative Dill and Representative Wagenius put forward a couple of years ago, and we've been thinking about it, running it past our members, and working on this idea. And the proposal that we had developed would take and I might let Mr. Suam kind of explain this in more detail, but it would take a certain percentage of the purchase price and put it in a trust that would go to the counties. The counties would be in charge of this trust, and I believe St. Louis County is doing something similar to this right now. From there, the county would distribute the appropriate amounts based on the current PILT formula to townships and, I believe, to school districts if appropriate. And then, but it would be a trust that there would be rules that would be set up that the county wouldn't be able to come in and take whatever was in that trust and kind of one fell swoop. It would be based on the interest, and it would also set it up so that the state also wouldn't be able to come in and take what was in that trust from what the county was managing. From there, I might turn it over to Mr. Suam to explain it probably better detail.
Thank you. Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Ken Suam, General Counsel with the Minnesota Association of Townships. The general concept that we're trying to look at is to basically say that PILT exists for lands currently not acquired by the legacy funds that are other DNR acquisitions. That is a program that's there in place. And we're not trying to supplant that. We're trying to recognize that we have new lands, new program, new needs, and we need to go forward with that. And so the proposal that we've been working on would look at, under current law, if any of you have a land transaction, one of the things that has to be paid is the property tax. You have to pay the property tax as part of the acquisition of the property, make sure that that's been accounted for. So building on that concept, we're looking at saying, at the time of acquisition, the state is would be obligated to pay X number of years of the property tax. The number that we're working on right now is a 30-year concept, saying you would look at, if you acquired land, say right now in 2011, and the assessed value for the tax on that land is $1,200 combined county township tax, you would pay 30 times that $1,200. That year's tax base would be immediately, or tax obligation would be immediately dispersed to the county and township as it is under current law for property taxes. The rest of the remaining funds would be invested in this dedicated trust, and using the state Florida investment guidelines, and that's what the trust that we were proposing would be governed by, the interest rates would then go to the county each year for distribution in exchange for the lost property tax. And the reason we think this works is twofold. One, what we're doing is setting up an obligation saying this is part of the acquisition cost. Then the state would have the choice of deciding, are we covering that through an additional appropriation? Are we using legacy funds? Because if legacy funds can be used to acquire property, then they're acquiring it with all obligations, and like I said, when you acquire property now, you're required to pay property tax obligations on that land. So we think it does meet the constitutional requirement, but the general concept is this is the cost. This is we're recognizing what the obligations are based on current law. Using a formula would say a 30-year investment allows that trust to be basically self-sustaining in perpetuity to cover the lost tax values. And so that's the general concept of what we're trying to work on.
Thank you, Mr. Suam. Questions to this point? I don't see, Representative Dill.
Thank you, Chair Culverton. I'm thinking, and you have done, Mr. Suam, you've done the runs on the potential return. I'm thinking about a trust that a person might have to their benefit, or a IRA, or a deferred comp. Usually you can get between 4% and 5% of the value of the trust or fund per year and not do harm to the corpus or to the value of the fund on the day of annuitizing it or things like that. And you folks have done the runs to look at that, and the 30 years times the taxes that you feel is enough to get that job done.
Mr. Sulem.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dill, Joe Matthews with AMC has helped us because he's got a much better background on the tax side, and he has pulled up the county tax records for random communities across the state and applied the State Board of Investment principles for investments. And to the best of our ability, using that 30-year number, you figure that land values most of the time increase, particularly the type of recreational and hunting type lands that this these funds are going for. They are the lands that right now are increasing in value. Knowing that investments go up and down, you have good years, you have bad years. Based on what he's looked at, the 30-year number does work out that it would allow the trust to remain whole and ensure that on average over the course of time we are being made as whole as we can accomplish.
Follow-up, Representative Dill.
Thank you, Chair Torgerson. And so then the next question I have, and I assume you've done all this, I'm just trying to make sure I understand it, is that the 20% that's in the bill as we see it today, the set-aside to cover that may well go to these trusts out in the counties at some point when we're more prescriptive in language, that is enough, you believe, depending, different places are different values, but in aggregate, you believe that a 20% amount of the purchase price across the state is an adequate amount to fund those trusts as the lands are acquired?
Mr. Sulem.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dill, we have not applied the 20% funding to that. Our approach was to look at saying what is needed to keep the local communities whole, what is needed for the state to recognize the obligation of the lost base. And so I can't speak to that particular question as to is 20% sufficient or not. We're trying to establish what the need is, and then this committee would have to decide or whatever appropriate finance committee would have to determine the best way of funding that obligation. But we're trying to create the situation where this is the obligation, here's what it's based on, and what is needed to keep the communities whole. Because one other situation that I wanted to address is that I'm not going to try to speculate what was in the mind of voters, what they thought they were voting for or not voting for in terms of how this tax would be used. But I will say I don't think any of them were thinking, gee, I want to pay sales tax and then have my property tax increase on top of that, which is what happens when the state acquires lands and we don't have adequate funding to cover the local needs. So now you're paying the sales tax and an increased property tax. And our approach would say this is the cost of acquisition. That's the key, is that we're tying it to the acquisition, that if acquisition is an improvement and an enhancement, we need the totality of that cost.
Thank you. A follow-up, Representative Dill?
Yeah, Mr. Willem, I appreciate that comment because I think that's an important part of this discussion and to the committee and the future discussion on this. I'm not sure that, obviously I agree with what the direction this is going, but I'm not sure that 10% is the right number, 15, 20, 25. I'm not sure what it's going to take to actually accomplish this goal. And so I'm not suggesting that I know either. I think a 20% is just a shot into a fading sun of a huge problem that we've had, a huge problem that we will have in the future with these dollars for acquisition. And that's it, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Sulem.
Mr. Chair, members, Representative Dill, I do appreciate that. And I guess what we would like to encourage, I know this bill has some deadlines to meet and trying to get out, but I would hope that perhaps maybe even next week or something, if this committee would be willing, we could have an informational hearing or an informal discussion session to allow some more fleshing out, and perhaps at that point we could work with some of the agencies to do some of the runs that Representative Wagenius referred to earlier and actually have
some numbers. You know, we don't have access to those resources that this committee and the agencies would have to help us with that. And so, you know, we do sincerely appreciate Representative McNamara's efforts to have something in this bill, Representative Erdahl's support of having it in his bill. But if we really could look at having some sort of discussion period, you know, in the relatively near future, I think it'd be very helpful.
Thank you. Representative McNamara to this point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Solem, I did just ask Director Becker, he had given these numbers earlier, that the estimated PILT on the acquisitions right now in this bill are somewhere in the neighborhood of the $175,000 to $195,000. I think that gives us a base number to work with and discuss how your situation could work, and we begin to realize not only do we have to be able to put this money in a trust and then make, you know, if we want to make the standard assumptions like the State Investment Board makes, but we also have to build in that this PILT would normally go up annually as values of land go up and costs go up and such. But it looks like this potentially could work, the amounts that we were working with. And I guess I know Representative Wagenius has something to say to this point, and I think it would be good to hear. But if we're thinking of doing something along this lines, either if we're just going to have the discussion and look at this as it goes onto the floor and onto conference committee, or if we think this is a better way to work with it, at least we have a basis, I think, to work off based on those numbers. The other thing that helps a little bit that I think we need to bring into the discussion, the PILT normally would not be paid for a couple years historically on how it's worked after acquisitions, but it is my intent that we would find a way to pick up on the first 2 years acquisitions in Lessard Sams so that we would deal with the entire land purchases in Lessard Sams. Now, I don't know if that means that we have to wait till next year to actually see if Lessard Sams would give us some additional money to put just into that fund to backfill those 2 years worth, or if we thought with our analysis that by the couple year delay and by continually put it in, if there was a way we could pick it up. But I just think it would be good if all the land in Lessard Sams never came to have obligations for the traditional general fund budget PILT payment. So that's, Mr. Chair, where I'm at. But Mr. Solem and Ms. Gartlitz do have the first workings of a amendment. It still had some substantial work yet to do. But if Representative Wagenius, I guess I would yield to you at this point, Representative Wagenius, on how you'd like to go forward.
Well, Mr. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think maybe we should have a little bit more flexibility here. And let me acknowledge that in Representative Dill's area, folks don't want any more land. But there are some areas in our state where folks really would like to have additional recreation land for their citizens. So I'm not sure that the best thing to do is to set a rigid number. Rather, we could say that up to a maximum, I'm going to pick a county, just take a county in southern Minnesota, or take Douglas County that has a fair amount of park and kind of likes to have more and has hunting area, that they may actually want to have additional area. And they would say, well, if you give me so much as a host fee, I will invest it, or perhaps we should have a way for the State Board of Investment to manage the money over the long term. I will take a certain amount of money. It may be less than what would be exactly a PILT payment. And I think that would more define a host fee, which is what I think perhaps would pass constitutional muster better than if you're just changing the way you do PILT. So one county may say, I want a whole bunch, and then the Heritage Council may say, well, we're not going to go to that county anymore. We're going to go to the county who really wants us to be there, and that their host fee is a lot less. And maybe with that, we would distribute our recreations land more fairly across the state. I don't know whether I'm being clear or not, but I certainly, having listened to counties over and over again, there are certain counties that do not want any more land that is publicly owned, and there are certain counties that are desperate for more land that is publicly owned. So whatever we set up should help out with that particular situation. So I guess I was thinking of this in a little different manner, so that counties actually would have more say and could be a little competitive in getting extra outdoor land.
Thank you for that input, Representative Wagenius. I believe Representative Fabian had a question to this point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Sulem and Ms. Garlitz, you raise an excellent point, and Chairman McNamara and Representative Wagenius, I think that what they discuss and talk about maybe leads us to what Mr. Sulem is talking about. We maybe need to have some more time to spend with this as a committee. Mr. Chair, I don't know what your intentions are, but there's lots of issues being raised here, and I just think that it's really important to continue the discussion. As you know, Northern Minnesota, with the tax bases and our school districts, our townships, and our counties, really need to be made whole and protect their tax base through this entire process. And Representative Dill talked about a setting sun, I believe. Well, for some of us, this is a rising sun. This isn't something that's going away. And in my opinion, it's going to get bigger and bigger unless we start to deal with it. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the question, Representative Fabian. I'm becoming more and more convinced that we may have the best basis in our bill right now to move forward with and continue this dialogue and figure out what is the best way. I just think it's so important that we go in with this money with recognizing the full expenses involved here, and we're doing that. Representative Hansen, Representative Wagenius have raised some questions as we try and work through what legally is the right thing to do and appropriate to do, because there's a lot of us that like the idea of buying land strategically in the parts of state where maybe it makes sense to be buying land, but I think we need to fully recognize those costs. It sounds like the counties and townships have a different idea. There's some logistics that are challenging for that part of the idea. There's certainly logistics involved and challenges with the way it's written in the bill now. I think we need to move it forward. I think that what we have in the bill looks to me like it certainly can work, and then we can have more discussion, and we're open to more discussion today during the day. Based on the time and hoping that we do some amendments today, it looks like we're going to be back in this committee time frame tomorrow, but I am becoming more and more convinced that maybe the way we have it in the bill right now is the best way to be moving forward with it at this point, Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Representative McNamara. Mr. Representative Hansen, to this point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to Chair McNamara. I think when we're talking about taxes and setting up a trust that's managed by the State Board of Investment, there's probably other committees of jurisdiction that would need to see it, the tax committee, probably the state government finance, before it goes to Ways and Means, because setting up a perpetual trust, to me, managed by the State Board of Investment, that's probably outside, or I would assume they might want to look at that, and I would assume the tax committee would probably want to look at this. So it seems the motion was to Ways and Means, but just wanting your thoughts on that.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hansen, I'll be glad to check with the chairs of those committees between now and tomorrow morning to see if we need to modify the direction of the bill.
Any other questions to this point? Seeing none, backtracking a bit, Representative Drazkowski, I believe you had some questions earlier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This would be for the author or whoever, maybe Mr. Becker. Kind of along that, I'd like to get a better understanding. You know, we already own 8.5 million acres of state land in Minnesota. I don't need to remind people, but the fourth or fifth largest landowner in the United States is the state of Minnesota. Do we know, and I'd like to get those numbers, Representative Erdahl, that you went through before, and I know you've got them. I don't need them right now. You've already, I'll get them from you later, and many people maybe wrote faster than I did. Do we know what, out of the...
Mr. Chairman, Representative Drazkowski.
Representative Erdahl.
Perhaps, Ms. Taylor, you could send them out to everyone. That's who I got from Ms. Taylor. Thank you.
We will have staff take care of that, Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do we know, Mr. Becker or Representative Erdahl, what out of the dollars throughout this bill, what proportion of them are into the areas of protect, restore, and enhance? Do we know that?
Mr. Chair.
Specifically to Article 1, are you talking about?
I would think.
Representative Drazkowski.
Mr. Chair, I would think probably Article 1 and 2, I would expect, would apply to this question.
Representative Drazkowski, if I'm not mistaken, they all need to be to restore, protect, and enhance. That's part of the Constitution. Language, if I'm interpreting it right. I apologize. We switched chairs in the middle of your question, but Representative Erdahl.
I think you're correct, Mr. Chairman, that all categories fit and do enhance, protect, and restore.
Well, Representative Erdahl, I believe it would be Articles 1 and Articles 2 that talks to. Though, because as much as some of the ones in Article 4, I'm thinking of the concert at the LeDuc Mansion in Hastings this coming summer. They actually kill some grass when there's so many people that are so popular sitting on the lawn there. So, Representative Erdahl.
I would suggest in Article 4 that, you know, we have historic buildings in Minnesota that are being enhanced, protected, and restored.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Drazkowski.
I am really looking at the whole area of our outdoor resources and not those in the parks and trails area and certainly not those in the arts and crafts, arts and cultural heritage, excuse me. But I am interested in the clean water and the Lassard Outdoor Heritage distribution that way. Do we have any numbers that at all that come close to that or not?
Well, and as members know, we are overrunning a different committee, and Representative Torkelson just left. So the clean water part, I'd like him to be part, if it's okay, of that discussion, Representative Drazkowski. But to Article 1, Mr. Becker, on the Restore, Enhance, Protect provisions.
Mr. Chair, the numbers that I have add up to $80 million, which is the correct on-the-ground figure. And it includes $69 million for protect, $9 million for enhance, and a little under $1 million for restore.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Becker. So I am assuming, Mr. Becker, that the protect category includes all of the land acquisitions and the easement purchases that are included in the bill. Out of the $69 million in protect, what portion of those are land fee title purchases and what portion are easement purchases?
Mr. Becker.
$44 million. 28 million easement.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Becker, I'm doing my math here. I don't know if those numbers add up. 44 and 20 would be 72, is that right? And you said 69 protect.
Director Becker.
Mr. Chair, Representative Duskowski is correct. I think that there's a problem in the numbers that I had before.
Well, Mr. Director Becker, why don't you work on those numbers? Representative Jaskowski, did you have additional questions? Okay, Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, I do have additional questions.
Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Jaskowski. I thought you were
nodding.
That
was a
nod.
Done. Shake.
Okay. Representative Jaskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So it appears that most or maybe all of the protect category is going out and buying some sort of encumbrance to the state, more liability in terms of either land purchases or easements and locking up more private land for state and public control, which in the whole Lessard Outdoor Heritage area, it looks like it's probably 80 or 85% of the bill is either buying land or buying easements, or 80 or 85% of Article 1, I should say, Mr. Becker. So that's an observation. I'm curious, within that, in your discussions on the council, why so much emphasis towards the protect and the acquisition and the easement purchases? Why aren't we doing more with the public resources we do have? And then the second part of that question is, has there been discussion about using some of the dollars that are allocated through the Constitution to protect, restore, and enhance in private land situations rather than focusing on public land?
Representative Jaskowski, you lumped in the easements with the land purchases in some of your discussions.
I did, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Jaskowski, the easements, generally speaking, stay in the ownership of private property, and they continue with the obligations of restore, enhance, protect the land, and pay the taxes on those lands. So I think your concern about taking things away from private property and putting them in the public domain, where the public gains some easement rights on those lands or some protection, they're willing land owners willingly going to real estate closings, getting paid a sum of money to give up certain rights that they want to give up in those easement situations. And the land ownership, if I'm not mistaken, is all willing landowners selling land to a willing land buyer, certainly a strong property rights. But if I'm not mistaken, before my editorializing, you had a question for Mr. Becker. And I lost track of it. Representative Jaskowski.
Mr. Chair, I think you got me on to another question, or maybe
Representative Jaskowski.
As Mr. Becker's, maybe he can remember what I asked last time, but I guess I'm looking at the public control of more and more land, whether it's purchasing the property rights for the easements of these properties, or actually outright buying the land. So I'm just noticing this trend again: 8.5 million acres in Minnesota, 25% of the land mass in Minnesota is controlled by some unit of government, and I don't know when we have enough, and so that's certainly part of our questioning there. But Mr. Becker, do you remember my other question?
Director Becker. We're an hour and 45-minute committee, and when we get into 3 hours, we run into challenges. Director Becker.
Mr. Chair, I didn't read your question. It was a question of has the council considered other things than fee simple acquisitions away from tax, as well as has the council considered working on private lands? The policy of the council, first of all, yes, they have considered.
Yes, they have considered other things than fee and easement. We present to them each time they make a decision what the impacts of that decision are in terms of fee, easement, restore, and enhance, so that they have their eyes wide open going forward. I can't testify as to what the individual members think. But I can say that they believe that the intent of the voters was to acquire land in a major way. So I've heard that, and I feel confident in repeating it. With regard to working on private lands, there are a number of programs in here, extended buffers on private lands, pairing up with the clean water buffers to do stream cleanup and lake cleanup. And I think that the centerpiece is a $13 million recommendation and appropriation to the Board of Water and Soil Resources for the RIM WRP program, which is conservation on private land.
Representative Drazkowski, you had asked the protect, enhance, restore question, and Representative Torkelson was juggling between here and the Ag Committee. I see he's back now. Do you want to phrase that question? He's filling double duty for Representative Erdahl also. So if you want to repeat your question on that, I believe Representative Torkelson could probably answer that. And then I'm going to go Representative Hansen has a question that I'd like to get in before he has to run to another committee also. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Torkelson, what I had asked of Mr. Becker was in article, and if you could, if you have it for Article 2, the breakdown between protect, enhance, and restore for your article.
Representative Drazkowski, Mr. Chair, Representative Drazkowski, I do not have a breakdown on that. That would be a it would take some time to try and come up with some kind of a number for you on that. Those three priorities are all, you know, ongoing priorities, and it would be actually difficult to, in some cases, to divvy out a percentage because some projects involve all three of those aspects.
Representative Torkelson, I think he's wondering if any projects don't meet any one of those three words. Would that be true, Representative Drazkowski? You're not necessarily looking for him to meet all three words?
Mr. Chair, I mean, as I understand with Lessard, they kind of have identified which categories the particular project would originate from. I don't know, Representative Torkelson, could staff maybe help generate some of this for between now and our next meeting?
Let's see what we can do on that that point. Representative Drazkowski, Representative Torkelson will work on that. Could I go to Representative Hansen's questions,
you could,
or did you have more?
Can I come back? I do
have
more.
We would. I believe he's trying to get to another committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe just quickly on this point, Mr. Becker, you have the, and it's on the webpage, but you could provide the allocation of how council members vote on projects. And I think that would be good to get to members because I think they'd see, Representative Drazkowski, some patterns on where people vote and how they vote in certain projects. Some folks may always vote for projects that acquire and vote less for restoration enhancement. Representative Quam, there are some members who vote almost all the time against any project in the seven county metro area and vote for every project outside. So I think it'd be very useful if that was distributed out to members on this particular point. And Mr. Chair, I know you've sat in the audience where some of that's occurred and seen that. So I think that on this point that Representative Drazkowski was just making. But to my point,
excuse me, Representative Hansen, could I comment on that? Director Becker, if you could work with Committee Administrator Rudolph on a potential link that we could get on the website today for people that would have that access to that information that Representative Hansen's talking about, and then we could have it available online. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Becker, on page 15, and Representative Erdahl, on the Outdoor Heritage Conservation Partners Grant Program, and looks like there's been a little bit of massaging to this since it was voted on, but maybe I'm wrong on that. Mr. Becker, on 15.17, 15.18, 15.19, my question is on the local, regional, state, and national organizations. The way that that's written, does that preclude cities or counties or soil and water conservation districts from applying to the small grants program?
Director Becker.
Mr. Chair, no, and there was specific discussion of this in the inaugural sessions of the council, and it was it agreed at the time that units of government were organizations.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to make sure that that was on the record, that Salem Water District, cities, counties, townships could apply. Furthermore, on that same section, if we go to page 16, 16.4, and kind of the whole long clause there that I think ends on 16.20. For grant applications of 250 or less, the commissioner shall provide a separate simplified application process. Does that simplified application process still follow the direction of the grants management process? Is it still having an auditable trail, still having criteria and measurement that's been outlined through the process over the last few years?
Director Grant, it was small grants of $25,000. Director Grant, I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair.
Director Becker.
Mr. Chair, they still follow the grants management regulations, yes.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that's important. We've had challenges with grants management. There's been a legislative audit overall, and so with this separate simplified application process, that's to encourage ease of application, but it does not lift any of the responsibilities that the grantee would have to do. Is that correct?
Director Becker.
It does not lift any responsibilities in terms of keeping records, reporting, things that the grants management statutes cover.
Thank you. And then, Representative Hans.
And then, Mr. Chair, it's on this same section. If we go down to 16.26 through 16.30, the commissioner shall give priority to organizations that have a history of receiving or a charter to receive private contributions for local conservation or habitat projects when evaluating projects of equal value. So, Mr. Becker, that's to, we're not just going to give something to somebody who wants it. It has to be a quality project, and the preference is only given if everything else is equal. Is that correct?
Director Becker.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Hansen.
One other question on page 30. Representative, or Mr. Becker, earlier you had mentioned that the council did not take positions on policy, but on line 30.23 to 30.25, this appears to be a statutory change on policy rather than anything that has to do with an appropriation. Is that correct?
Director Becker.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it also, Mr. Becker, it treats the public appointed members differently than the legislative appointed members. Is that correct?
Director Becker.
Mr. Chair, in terms of the terms, is that what you're inferring?
Yes.
Representative Hansen.
Correct.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Back to you, Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Becker, and Representative Erdahl, I was pleased to hear you talk earlier about potentially thinking about, with the capital restoration, considering next year, considering these funds for that, because I agree that is about as perfect of a fit for those as you can get. Mr. Becker, I'm curious, had the council heard, I'm on the Capital Investment Committee, and have heard about some flood projects in northwest Minnesota that were largely accomplished with the flood relief dollars that were provided to them, but there were some connected environmental enhancement components to those projects, of which I understand they're coming back and asking the Capital Investment Committee to borrow more money from and to be paid back by the taxpayers of Minnesota to take care of those environmental enhancements, which would seem to me to fit very well into one of these areas, either the LaSard area or the Clean Water area. I'm curious, did they come to the council asking or applying for any of these dollars?
Director Becker.
Mr. Chair, a number of the watershed districts have, Bois de Sioux, for example, applied, been heard. the council has had struggled with teasing out the wildlife values versus flood control values and haven't felt comfortable recommending funds for the wildlife values because they're struggling with teasing those out.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Becker, what is the status there? Basically, I mean, it sounds like those projects then were rejected because there wasn't comfort among the council as to what there is what it sounds like. As we look at our fiscal responsibilities as a state to have this large pool of dollars available that seems to match very well those needs, I would hope that the council could work with those groups to help bring forward a recommendation to get those funded through here, because the bonding area is we're at $1.2 billion on debt service now, and the biennium, the fastest growing part of our budget is debt service. We're in a $5 billion deficit. We can't afford to be borrowing more money, so I would hope we can find a way to do that. Are there plans for continued discussions with those groups to find a way to get that done, Mr. Becker?
Mr. Chair.
Director Becker.
Representative Drazkowski, I appreciate the message. I'll carry it. Yes, there are plans to try to improve presentations. That's one of the jobs of staff, and to communicate where we think the problems are and getting the message across. So we hope that they can come back with a clearer message and receive recommendations in the future.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Becker.
I have Representative Purcell. It's been a while, but Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I apologize. I had to step out and check in down at Ag. And I came back in, and I missed some of the discussion that I intended to at least get my 2 cents on, and that was around the tribal language projects. And I appreciate Representative Erdahl's expression of commitment to that. I just think there are some things that are of significant import that we'd be able to agree on, and hopefully that's the way it's going to come out. My specific question, Representative Erdahl, and it's in Article 1, page 23, down subdivision 12 there, the line 23.21 to 23.25. There's this little blurb, if you will, a very important one about accessibility, structural, non-structural facilities that meet design standards, American Disabilities Act, accessibility guidelines. And my question, I'm very pleased that this is in here, my question to you is, does this apply throughout 1061 to when we get to talking about where art programs are going to be held, education programs are going to be held, that all this is going to be accessible? Not every building in the state of Minnesota is accessible. I'm sure you all got a few in your district you could find. I know there's some in mine. So that's my question. Is this going to apply throughout the whole bill?
Thank you, Representative Purcell. Director Becker, can you speak to why this paragraph is in Article 1?
Mr. Chair, I was making a note on your request. Which paragraph are we talking about?
Director Becker, we're on page 23. It deals with the accessibility. You have a paragraph about structures and non-structured facilities must meet ADA requirements.
Mr. Chair, that's a standard section that we, I have to admit, cribbed out of the LCCMR language. And it's we do build things like parking lots, that sort of thing that need to be accessible.
And Representative Purcell, the administration department is here, and if you want them to speak to the general requirements of ADA, I mean, some of it may not be in here because current law requires a certain amount of that, but do you have a specific question? I know they do some of that in some of the outdoor projects. As you know, sometimes we have some handicap accessibility paths. Actually, they have to go through some special hoops to be able to put paths in WMAs, for instance, because generally speaking, paths are not allowed on WMAs, but we do do some access in some of those areas specifically so we can accommodate some physically challenged hunts and things like that. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and it does appear, I believe it's apparent, that we're talking about outdoor-related projects here in Article 1. My question specifically was, and to whomever we need to, I would try and gain an answer, does this accessibility language apply throughout all of the projects, the education, the art projects, that they're going to be held in areas that are accessible? And is that a requirement? Can we, if we need clarification from, you know, another time, that's good.
And Representative Purcell, certainly any new construction, you know, has strong ADA requirements. Representative Erdahl.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Purcell, if there are some others more familiar that can add to this, feel free to come on down. But I know, you know, in Article 4, where we're dealing with building restoration, historic buildings and such, that there are, you know, certain leeways where, you know, if a building is a certain age, depending on the usage, maybe some of the ADA requirements aren't required. However, generally, if they're going to be open to the public, they are. I am involved. I didn't think I'd bring this up specifically today, but the Litchfield Opera House. We are doing some restoration, and we have a balcony there, and frankly, there's all kinds of code violations in that building right now. Please, if there's anyone here, don't investigate. But these are going to have to be rectified, and we know that. You know, elevators and various other things are going to have to be done eventually, and we are aware of that, and before it's actually open to the public, they will be taken care of.
Thank you.
So there are other buildings like that as well. I'm just using that one as an example.
Representative Purcell.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Erdahl on that. And I would relate a little bit of a similar experience in going to a granddaughter's Christmas concert, and we were in a building. We had to carry my daughter up the stairs because there was no ramp. I was quite surprised in downtown Bemidji. So there are buildings out there where, you know, programs are being held, art programs. And this is, we're talking about, and back in some of the language back here in Article 4 specifically, music art performances. And we're going to have educational classes that are going to be held potentially in arts, et cetera. And that is my, I guess I maybe, if we can get clarification, that's great. If I need to come back with an amendment that we're going to make that apply to everything that's going to happen with these funds, then I'll do that. But I would accept, you know, clarification first.
Well,
Representative Erdahl.
Mr. Chair, Representative Purcell, we'll try to get some clarification. But I do believe in, you know, many of these structures that we're talking about, the ADA laws do apply.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd first like to comment that I appreciate Representative Skowski's bringing up the wildlife enhancements on the flooding area, because that's a concern that I share with him. But my question is for Mr. Becker. On 2.9, you say that the prairies are getting $35 million. Is that actual all prairies, or is that prairies and grasslands?
Director Becker.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius, that includes grasslands.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. I think it would be a more honest title to say prairies and grasslands then. Which brings me to my question on 4.25, and there are other places, that money is given to the Nature Conservancy to acquire native prairie. But on page
35, we are repealing all the definitions of what native prairie is. So is this kind of just loosey-goosey, anything people deem to be native prairie is native prairie, or do you have criteria?
Director Becker.
Mr. Chair, representing Wagenius, it is what the applicant deems native prairie. We do not have criteria.
Representative Wagenius.
Then, thank you, Mr. Chair. We have very little native prairie left in this state, and that's obviously, folks know that's been a concern of mine, and so we repeal the definitions. We let people define what native prairie is, so we don't know how much we're really following the Constitution and what Minnesotans wanted when they say to restore, protect, or enhance prairies. We can't tell them if we are following their desire. We don't know how much actual native prairie is being protected in this bill, do we?
Director Becker.
Mr. Chair, Representative Wagenius. At this point, I don't think we have that answer. I think we only have the answer after the appropriation is expended.
Representative Wagenius.
Mr. Chair, that is really troubling to me. This is the resource that we have the least amount of in the state. Gets the least attention. And we have a pattern of giving the most money to the resource that has we have the most of, and that's the forests. Do you think that, that of course is a decision for the council, but I wish you would take back the concern that the citizens said one thing and they do not seem to be taking the citizens' desires to heart.
Director Becker.
Mr. Chair, I will carry the message.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to, Mr. Becker, I'd like to echo Representative Draskowski's comments about the flood projects and so forth. I've worked with the DNR and the Red River Basin and the watershed districts. I think there's general agreement that any of these projects can be beneficial to wildlife as well. So I would appreciate if you'd take my message back to the commission and tell them that as well. And then just one other thing, just real quickly, as I thought of this, Representative Wagenius, I don't remember anything on the ballot specifically about prairie. So I think it's somewhat, and it might have been there, but I don't remember exactly how it was worded and so forth. But if you could address that just real quickly for me, please. I'd like some clarification. Thank you.
Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. On the ballot, it said protect, restore, and enhance prairie. Just as it said protect, restore, and enhance wetlands. Just as it said protect, restore, and enhance forests. In the statutory direction to the council, they actually have some statutory direction to protect native prairie, and they're not doing it.
Representative Fabian, and we will make sure that everyone has the constitutional language for tomorrow morning's meeting, but the sentence that Representative Wagenius is speaking to, I will read. It says, and may be spent only to restore, protect, and enhance wetlands, prairies, forests, and habitat. Excuse me, I'm going to go back and start at the beginning of the sentence. 33% of the receipts shall be deposited in the Outdoor Heritage Fund and may be spent only to restore, protect, and enhance wetlands, prairies, forests, and habitat for fish, game, and wildlife. Semicolon. Next, I have Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I had to step out for a while, too, so I apologize if this question has been asked. But to Mr. Becker, I'm looking at page 6 and that paragraph H, accelerating waterfall production, a $9.8 million appropriation to Pheasants Forever to acquire wetlands and grasslands. Why is there no 20% set aside there for maintenance and pilt? Director Becker.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, the disposition of the property bought in that particular program is that it's under the management of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. The federal government pays for the management and the payment of taxes in their fashion.
Representative Anderson, the amendment that we or the bill, the way it is before us, includes, I commonly refer to it as the 20% factor for all state lands that are going to be held in state fee title and would normally receive PILT payment from the state of Minnesota or be eligible for those payments. Land that's owned by the federal government, using the acronym WPA, waterfall production areas, commonly it's the white signs if you're out hunting, as opposed to the yellow-orange signs that are the wildlife management areas, the WMAs of the state ownership. The federal government has been the one that makes the PILT payments historically on the WPA areas. Representative Anderson.
Well, as I understand, the federal payments are even more up in the air than state payments because it's based on revenue they take in and it's nothing guaranteed. So are you saying that we're taking state money to buy land to give to the federal government?
Director Becker, I'm going to let you explain exactly how that is working with the WPAs.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, the Pheasants Forever buys the land off of a list that is compiled by the federal government, and it is then deeded over to the United States of America.
Director Becker, if I can follow up along those lines, some of this land, instead of the federal government paying annual PILT payments, isn't some of it subjected to a one-time payment by the federal government up front? And is any of that land satisfying the PILT payments in that method? And if you don't know the answer to that, we should probably have that by tomorrow.
Mr. Chair, that land does, you know, on occasion, in some cases, pay upfront payments.
And that is to the local units of government, yeah. And that's something that they get instead of an ongoing annual payment. And I think if I stall long enough, Representative Anderson, it looks like we may be getting some help from phone a friend. If you could identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Pat Carroll. I'm the Chief of the Division of Realty with the United States Fish and Wildlife Service here in Port Snelling, Minnesota. You had a question about the trust fund payments that we make and also the revenue sharing payments. Based upon the properties that we buy in fee title, we run it through a formula that determines what the taxes are on the property. We subtract that from the amount of actual payment by revenue sharing. The difference is then run through this formula to determine what do we need to pay or give in a trust fund to the counties in order to allow them to invest it and then reap their investment in order to offset that loss in taxes. There was a question about isn't the federal government in worse shape? Yes, the payments for revenue sharing have been going down. That's where we kicked in this trust fund payment. So even if the overall payment was to go to zero, we would still have this trust fund payment for lands that come over to the United States Fish and Wildlife Service through this program. This year alone, on the 14 properties that we're working on with Pheasants Forever, we'll be making about $250,000 in trust fund payments to the counties.
And thank you for that information. $250,000 a payment to the counties, and the purchase price was $5 million. Mr. Becker, did I hear Representative Anderson asked about a line item?
It's $5.6 million.
Thank you. Representative Anderson. Representative Wagenius, to this point.
To this point, I think Representative Anderson brings up an excellent point. And we should have a discussion among us about recommending to the Heritage Council that it may not be appropriate anymore to give lands to the federal government. If we want to talk about deficit, there's where you talk about deficit and the expectation that we will continue to get ongoing payments is not realistic. Upfront payments is a different thing, but the percentage sounds very small. So I think we ought to have that discussion in this committee.
Thank you. Representative Fabian. Okay, members, we're going to go to some of the amendments now, and I'm going to have a fair amount of flexibility here, members. We're going to move some amendments, and if either the majority or the minority wants to wait until tomorrow, I'm going to try and do some non-controversial, but there's a number of members not in the audience. So, members, we start. Mr. Becker, you have the I have the members. The A42 amendment deals with some issues that have been before Lessard. Sam purchases involve, I believe, it's some questions by the federal government. Mr. Becker, could you explain the A42 amendment?
Mr. Chair, yes, I can. This corrects the session log before you in the section dealing with, on page 26, dealing with easement monitoring, dealing with real property interest report, and it deletes language on line 2610, beginning with the word provide, through the period on 2616. The attempt here is to remove all obligations and responsibilities. There are a series of obligations and responsibilities in the grant contract between Pheasants Forever and the state that make it difficult for the federal government to accept the land, and they are either superfluous or antiquated. There are four of them. One is antitrust, two is government data practices, three is venue, and four is state audits. It's our understanding that all of those are intended to guide the management of the grant agreement and not the future management of the land. The Department of Natural Resources is here if you'd like to discuss this further.
Any members' questions to the A42? Representative Hansen.
Mr. Chair, I always get concerned when we talk about audits, and so Mr. Becker, on the relating to the audits, that there still would be audit authority here that for both the NGO and as they would acquire and then distribute. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair.
Director Becker.
Representative Hansen. Absolutely.
Representative Hansen. All those in favor of the A42 say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The A42 is adopted. Next, we will do the this is Representative Wagenius, the amendment that we did. I'm sorry, we had an informational hearing yesterday in Legacy on Representative Westrom's bill that added the words, I'm sorry, members, it's the A45, excuse me. It's the A45. It was a Westrom bill that had an informational hearing yesterday in Legacy. It deals with the beneficial use of wastewater, and it adds the word stormwater. And I believe Representative Wagenius, this was heard in that committee. It would allow, there's some money that Representative Wagenius, I believe in the last biennium, was set aside for the purpose of beneficial use of wastewater, and it's our thoughts that if we added stormwater, we may get some industrial users to reuse this water instead of pulling new water out of the ground. Comments from members? Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I do support this amendment, but it does bring up a problem. And the problem is that what the testimony was in committee, that as new projects are engineered, folks need to engineer them with the thought in mind that they could be using either wastewater or stormwater. But we don't have any more money in the account, and none was appropriated in this new bill. And I think that is one of the fundamental flaws in the new bill. We should have some money set aside for beneficial reuse of wastewater and stormwater. It's appropriate, so that people don't use groundwater. And if we don't have any, then there is no reason for engineers to say, oh, I want to meet with my wastewater treatment system to see if I can have that water finished in a different way so I can use it. So we're taking away the very incentive that Representative Westrom, I think, appropriately wants to use. So it's a good amendment, but it also points out that we should be putting some money aside to do this very thing.
Representative Wagenius, I might be misunderstanding. I thought there is $1 million available, and it hasn't gotten used yet. Is that money still not available? Representative Wagenius?
No. Once that money is used up, there will be no more money available. So the new bill, this new bill coming up, does not put any money in for beneficial reuse of wastewater. The testimony was that you really don't go back and fix an oil ethanol plant once you've got a source of water. It's when you are engineering the plant, you're designing it, you say, I can go to my wastewater treatment system and say to them, there are public funds available to finish water in a different way so that I could possibly use it. Will you work with me on that? That was the incentive, and now that's gone because this will spend all the money.
Well, Representative Wagenius, as you know, in the previous biennium, they did an RFP, and unfortunately nobody even applied for the grants, and so that was the reason for this expansion. And I guess I would agree with you that I'm hopeful that Representative Erdahl has to come back here next and say, we put out a grant, we had way too many applications, we need more money, and then I think we're going to be to where you and I hope we'll be and need to expand this program. Representative Wagenius.
But I don't think there is no grant program going out because there won't be any money. You have to have kind of money on the table. And what had happened before and what PCA was explaining to us, that they put out a grants proposal for projects essentially that already had a source of water, where the better way to do it is to have money so that people, when they're engineering a new project, say, oh, I'm going to start thinking about wastewater or stormwater as my source of water rather than groundwater. Because there is some money that allows that wastewater treatment system to finish the water in a way that ethanol plant can use it, or whatever other, you know, industry can choose to use it. Beneficial reuse of wastewater is, I think, didn't we talk about, there are, who mentioned it? Yeah, I think it was when we were talking about with Representative Dill about snowmaking, that in Arizona they're using wastewater to make snow. That's a beneficial reuse. But this is the end of the program. That's the problem. This is fine, but it's the end because we haven't put any new money on the table.
Thank you. All those in favor of the A45 say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The A45 is adopted. Members, I think we're just going to do one more, and then we will adjourn and come back tomorrow. Members, I will move the A38. Representative members, I believe this is non-controversial. It deals, Mr. Becker, maybe you can speak to it, and if it is questions are controversial, we can wait and do it tomorrow, but I think it's non-controversial. It deals with some admin coordination, Director Becker, between you and the DNR. Director Becker.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. This is an amendment to the pass-through administration, making it a direct appropriation to the department rather than a contract between LCC and the department. It restores the language to the way the first two bills were written. We had some differences with the department about the way in which they were administering the programs. I think that we're well on the way to working those differences out, and I don't think we need this leverage anymore.
Any questions to the 838? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The amendment's adopted. Members, I'm just going to confirm with you what you need to save in your packets. I have six amendments at this point, numerically from the bottom, A36, A39, A43, A46, A48, and an A49. There's six of them. Members, you will have until the end of what normally would be a normal business day, let's say 4:30. If you have any amendments in regards to tomorrow's meeting, it'll be our intention, hopefully, to move right into direct into these amendments when we have our full committee here, and then we'll be able to discuss the bill intact. Members, I have the minutes of the April 28th meeting. Representative Fabian moves the minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The minutes are adopted. Any questions to the procedure tomorrow in regards to the bill? Members, we're adjourned. Thank you for your patience in meeting so long today.
Thank you.